when it comes to the current political landscape. Starmer, drama. Farmer, of course, quite a big part of his policy platform. Karma, both words, of course, work. Karma beginning with C and karma beginning with K. So Starmer, drama, farmer, karma, karma. Which bit of the current crisis, because it is a crisis, whether you like that word or not, is down to Starmer, and which bit is down to drama? By which I mean the sort of addiction that we've all developed over the last 10 years to chaotic politics. I think it's actually quite an important question, but of course that depends largely on your answers.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, 11 trade unions affiliated with the Labour Party have said that it's clear Sir Keir Starmer will not lead the party into the next election. In a statement, they say plans will have to be put in place in the near future to elect a new leader. Wes Streeting, who's seen as a key challenger to the PM, met Sir Keir in Downing Street this morning. It lasted less than 20 minutes, and the Health Secretary ignored questions from reporters after leaving Number 10.
What did you say, Mr. Streeting?
Did you ask the Prime Minister to resign?
Are you going to resign, Mr. Streeting?
87 Labour MPs have called for Sir Keir to quit, but more than 100 others have publicly backed him. Labour peer Baroness Chapman has told LBC the party has to unite to recover from last week's election results.
What I would say is that it's much, much better to take a breath and to really think hard about what happened. But I think the idea that you must then embark upon this chaotic contest potentially for who not just leads the Labour Party, but is Prime Minister of the country, I genuinely don't think that that is what the country wants us to do right now.
The meeting between Sir Keir and Wes Streeting was held ahead of the King's speech this lunchtime. Charles will set out the government's future agenda for the upcoming parliamentary session. You can hear it live and in full with James O'Brien here on LBC. In other news, the bodies of three women have been recovered from the sea off the coast of Brighton. Sussex police say officers were called to welfare concerns near Madeira Drive earlier today. The force is working to confirm their identities and to understand what happened. 22 people evacuated from a cruise ship hit by an outbreak of hantavirus are expected to start leaving a hospital in Merseyside today. The group will be expected to isolate for another 42 days at home. Research suggests a new daily pill could help people coming off obesity jabs remain slim. A study has found taking the tablet every day for a year prevented people from regaining significant weight. And the Princess of Wales will begin her visit to Northern Italy later. Kate, who champions early years education, is on her first solo overseas visit since she was treated for cancer in 2024. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 59 at 10,324. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for much of the UK. Windy in the southwest, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And once you start, you just can't stop. I'm not talking about Pringles. I am talking about rhyming. Once you start seeing the rhymes, you can't, because the Starmer drama has now escalated into a Streeting meeting. There is about which many people presumably are tweeting. So they're tweeting the Streeting meeting in the midst of the Starmer drama. A Prime Minister, of course, who should have been making things calmer. So I'm going to try to stop now, but I'm going to struggle. So please bear with me. It was supposed to be... God, anyone else just hear a Streets lyric kick in there? Or it was supposed to be so easy. It was supposed to be a sea change. It was supposed to represent an end to a very overused word, not least by me, psychodrama. It was supposed to be the end of psychodrama. Just two short years ago, when a managerial and exciting man, whether that's fair or not, that was his public persona, a managerial, competent, process-driven managerial politician was making his way into Downing Street after a succession of either morally bankrupt or intellectually inadequate predecessors. Or, in the case of Theresa May, I think a perfectly competent politician who was required to pretend that reality was not reality as a consequence of the Brexit vote. I have no idea what the history books will have to say about Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister. It feels already like a punctuation mark, doesn't it? A semicolon, perhaps. A semicolon of a Prime Minister. It feels like a semicolon. I can't think off the top of my head of anything significant that he did. The ridiculous Rwanda plan. I think he inherited, didn't he? And just refused to put in the bin. Because he was, I presume, frightened of the response from people who had absolutely no idea what the numbers were and what the reality of that policy would have involved, i.e. most of his own party. I look back on Rishi Sunak at the moment as a punctuation mark, and I don't mean that unkindly. I just think he was like pressing pause on the poison that went before. So if you have the morally bankrupt Boris Johnson, the intellectually absent Liz Truss, then Rishi Sunak came along, who was neither morally bankrupt nor intellectually inadequate, but he just pressed pause on a process that began in 2015, or 2010 technically, but effectively in 2015, 2016. And Keir Starmer, whether you welcomed his election or not, it was very fleeting, the Streeting meeting. Whether you welcomed his election or not, Keir Starmer was supposed to stop the drama. He was supposed to usher in a period of, whichever you way you dice it, either calmness or dullness, or both, wasn't he? I mean, that was the thing upon which almost everybody was agreed, that at least we're not going to have the ludicrous internecine warfare that typified so many of the previous years. I mean, Theresa May's premiership was absolutely characterised by internecine warfare. And on the other side of the house, so, of course, was Jeremy Corbyn's. Then along came Boris Johnson and tried to rip up all the rule books and almost got away with it. He probably would have got away with it if it wasn't for you pesky kids. And if anyone in British politics has ever looked like a Scooby-Doo villain, then Dominic Cummings would probably be the winner of all the prizes. And then, of course, that brief foray of Liz Truss, an attempt to prove that reality really doesn't matter. A sort of premiership built upon the presumption that gravity, financial gravity, doesn't exist. And that went well, as you know. And then, as I say, the semicolon, the pause politician, the pause button politician, Rishi Sunak, who was never really equipped or entitled to make massive and meaningful change to the country, but at least he wasn't Boris Johnson or Liz Truss. So everyone sort of gave him a bit of a break. So much so, of course, that his succession to the leadership was entirely unchallenged, because even the Conservative Party that had put Liz Truss in charge by that point had sort of thrown their arms up in the air and just gone, please, please make it stop. And Keir Starmer made it stop. And he was supposed, of course, to make lots of other things stop as well. And those things most obviously were internecine warfare, drama and chaos. And this morning, again, whether you like it or not, because I'm struggling with the I'm struggling with the Venn diagram, how much of the brouhaha is media created and how much of the brouhaha is media reported. I'm not struggling unduly, because the election results of last week were catastrophic, but not unprecedented. Catastrophic, but not unprecedented for the sitting government. The only thing unprecedented about those results was that the major party of opposition benefited not a jot from the epic unpopularity of the party of government. That is unheard of. That is unprecedented. That is a mark of a very changing world. But But I mean, it is obviously ridiculous to suggest that all of the talk of leadership change, all of the talk of crisis, all of the talk of chaos is down to journalists being addicted to drama. In this case, of course, to Starmer drama. But when you've got the trade unions, 11 of the biggest unions, effectively pulling the plug or calling time on a premiership, then it is a matter that extends far beyond the concerns of plutocrat, oligarch, right-wing media owners and their lickspittles. I mean, this is the unions now saying that's enough to Keir Starmer, saying you can't go. It doesn't mean it's true, doesn't mean it will come to pass, but you can't pretend it doesn't matter. You can't pretend it's all down to the Daily Mail or Rupert Murdoch, as I am sometimes tempted to do. So he was supposed to stop the chaos. He was supposed to stop the internecine warfare. He was supposed to stop the instability. All of the things he was supposed to stop have not stopped. Again, I don't think that's an opinion. I think that's counting. We could today have another conversation about who you want to be Prime Minister this time next year. The Fleeting Streeting meeting in the middle of the Starmer drama suggests that the change, were it to come, is not going to be coming in the next 48 to 72 hours. And when it does come, it will be an announcement of a later change, if it comes at all. So I think the moment has passed in terms of immediate and signal change, but the moment of considering future change is absolutely still smack where we are. Why has Keir Starmer failed to stop the rot? The democratic rot, the political rot. Why? Because I do think it's important to take a broader sweep of recent history. When you're talking about the state of the nation, it's ridiculous not to, frankly. Keir Starmer is a flawed man, but frankly, who isn't? Answer, well, women. But they're flawed women. We are all flawed humans, aren't we? Keir Starmer is not in the pay of foreign-based billionaires in the way that previous prime ministers and current party leaders are. He is not detached entirely from economic reality in the way that Liz Truss was. He is not dedicated to completely ignoring the rules and protecting his cronies from proper accountability and examination. I mean, some of the stuff that went on under Boris Johnson would have stopped traffic if we lived in a country with a half-honest media. I mean, even just little stuff like suggesting that they all need to form a square around Priti Patel. And I think the second time she broke the ministerial code. And you look at how the right-wing media deals now with any breaches of the ministerial code, and you have essentially a case study in epic hypocrisy. And Keir Starmer has actually accepted resignations from politicians in his own cabinet who did things that would have probably got them promoted in a Boris Johnson cabinet. So this idea, and everyone's doing it, I'm afraid, this idea that that he is proving to be as bad as predecessors is precisely what you would say if you had been corrupt enough to defend his predecessors. And I use the word corrupt very advisedly. If you had been morally or materially corrupt enough to defend Boris Johnson in particular and Liz Truss as well, then you would be desperate to pretend that where Keir Starmer finds himself now is in any way similar to where those two politicians took themselves and indeed the country. But you cannot argue with the failure to stop the chaos, the failure to stem the internecine warfare, the failure to bring basic stability, dullness and stability were what was needed. And I think it is absolutely fascinating to ask you two questions. Why has Keir Starmer failed to stop the political rot? Why does it feel like we're in another cycle of chaos and competition? It was the one thing that I would probably have put money on 2 years ago not happening. And here we are 2 years later. So why? Why has he? And I think, and you may well prove me wrong with your answer to the first question, but I think intrinsic to that question is the question of responsibility. How much of this, You've noticed this question just creeping up on the outside lane. Is the country actually ungovernable? Have we reached a point as a consequence of various factors where no Prime Minister is ever going to get an even break? It is going to become polarised, vicious, divisive and binary, with essentially the main divide in British politics between being people who accept and acknowledge reality and people who peddle and pretend to believe in fantasy. And not unlike what has happened in the United States of America, although you will struggle to find anybody who would mount a spirited defence of where the Democratic Party finds itself at the moment. But a basic divide between reality and fantasy, between truth and lies. And if you're governing in the world of truth, you are probably on a hiding to nothing. You're probably on a hiding to nothing. So, why do you think Keir Starmer has failed to stop the rot? And how much of it is down to him? How much of it is down to the person as opposed to the politics? 0345 6060 973. How much of Keir Starmer's current plight is his fault? And how much is simply a consequence of circumstance? I am not going to answer that question at this point in proceedings, partly because I can't with any great confidence, but I am going to tell you, as of 16 minutes after 10 this morning, much to my own surprise after yesterday's programme, I kind of want him to stay put for now, and possibly for the foreseeable, because the more I contemplate the possible alternatives and what the delivery of those alternatives would involve, the more I think, better the devil you know. That is a position from which I am very, very persuadable, but it's where I find myself now. So, why has Keir Starmer failed to do the one thing that he seemed best qualified to do, stop the drama and the chaos? How much of that failure is personal? How much of it is down to him? And how much of it is political, down to the country that we now inhabit, the political environment in which we all live? And just as a side order, I personally don't want any more chaos and instability, and I don't see how a leadership challenge, a leadership battle of any type or ilk, does anything but guarantee at least a good few more months of internecine warfare, instability and chaos. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. 1017, I'm nearly there. There is another question that we've never actually got round to asking. Partly because it involves, I think, speculating upon the motivation of slightly mad people. But the visceral, personal hatred of Keir Starmer is unignorable. And it will be driving a lot of the MPs and possibly even the union leaders who are calling time on his premiership. It strikes me as being hideously unfair. I mean, by all means, point out his dullness or his lack of charisma or critique his intonation. But, I mean, apart from obvious lies online about his private life, which, of course, all the usual suspects have signed up for, what on earth explains why this relatively innocuous man has managed to excite such extraordinary levels of personal, vituperative dislike, even, and I don't like using this word in the context of politics, even hatred? Is that enough to be going on with? As we await the King's Speech, and while we await the King's Speech, give me a little steer on how much Dimbleby you want from me. I don't really recognise anyone. I don't know what any of them are called. I've been doing this for 20 years. I still couldn't tell you the difference between a black rod and a pink stocking. I as I get older, my facial recognition skills are diminishing, so I probably won't even recognise household name politicians as they make their way. The only thing I can do with any confidence is describe to you the body language between Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch as they make their way from the House of Commons, I think, to the House of Lords, although possibly Westminster Hall. I don't even know where it takes place. 20-something years I've been covering the King's Speech live. Obviously, it was previously known as the Queen's Speech. See, I'm not completely stupid. And I still, if you put me on Mastermind, I'd get zero on what goes on, what happens, who does what, where it all unfolds and what it means, except the body language between the two leaders. And here is a question, actually, pertinent to, you don't need to answer it. Pertinent to the question with regards to chaos, internecine warfare and instability, when is the last time, genuine question, the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition appeared civil as they made their way together down the corridors of power prior to the King's speech? When was the last time they looked as if they would be able to break bread and enjoy a meal together? What were the last two? The last leader of the opposition and Prime Minister. Actually, that's a game. You can play that. Text me on 84850 or WhatsApp me on 03456060973. Let's get the phone in, up and running after this.
LBC.
Lost World Play Barn, Tommy Tractor Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Ring-tailed lemurs, capybara, crazy golf, Cannon Arena, Magical Wood, and cafes. Jungle Kingdom Zoo, rides, indoor and outdoor play. There's so much to do.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Quadrupilla, meerkats, Sherlock Holmes, Dino Drop, Honey Pop Airs, Elder Displays. Oh, what fun!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
What? You didn't know you could get club card prices on Tesco Travel Insurance? Get away. Save 15% on your travel insurance in our summer sale and join over 1 million customers who've already trusted us with their cover. Buy direct using your club card to get 15% off, but only until the 8th of July. Don't miss our summer sale. Search Tesco Travel Insurance and get a quote direct today. Underwritten by AWP PNC SA. Offer excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See Tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Yours. James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Yeah, Cameron and Miliband is the most popular suggestion. And I guess that's true, although we had some early indications under Ed Miliband's leadership of the Labour Party of just how completely hideous our newspapers were when they attacked his dead father in the most extraordinary of terms. But David Cameron was not either encouraging of or responsible for that hideousness. It was entirely on Paul Dacre, the editor of the Daily Mail, dancing on the grave of a dead war hero. Absolutely extraordinary conduct. But, of course, as Brexit edged ever closer, it became more and more in character, if you like. But it's Starmer we're talking about today, and his failure to do the one thing that enemies and admirers alike thought that he was best qualified to do, to stop the drama. Anna is in Oxford to kick things off. Anna, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello. I wasn't expecting to be first on. So my theory is, and I've had this theory for a long time before he actually became leader, but I don't actually think he does have a lot of principles. I know you think he's a principled man, and obviously if you compare him to Farage, he is, anybody is.
Yes.
But looking at all the... I mean, the flip-flops even occurred really before he kind of got elected. You know, he used to be in Jeremy Corbyn's cabinet, and he said he supported Jeremy Corbyn's policies. Now he doesn't support any of Jeremy Corbyn's policies. All of the stuff that everybody's gone through over and over, child benefit cap, welfare, winter fuel, that he's flip-flopped on, pandering to Trump and then not pandering to Trump. And my theory is, it's because he's trying to play to two audiences.
Mm.
So yesterday I had a look. I wanted to see which members of the cabinet got donations from companies like private healthcare companies, gambling companies, things like that. And the only member of the cabinet that's ever been a member of the cabinet, because she's not now, obviously, is Rayner, is the one that hasn't had donations from any of those companies that potentially have conflict of interest.
Mm.
So all
I mean, it's a fair point. It's like some people might roll their eyes at the frequency with which it's made, but they do not give money. Nobody gives money to any politician or political party without some expectation of something in return. Well, hardly. I mean, there are a few, I suppose, glorious examples of it, but hardly anyone does it, whether it's on the left or the right.
Yeah, so clearly if he's getting money from various companies like that, he is working for them, whilst his backbenchers, I think, are more core Labour, old Labour values. They want to see their lives improve for their constituents, the majority of them do. And so there he is trying to basically pander to two completely conflicting wishes. And he cannot, so he's trying to keep everybody happy, and as a result, he's keeping absolutely no...
Who should he annoy?
He should annoy the big businesses.
Well,
I mean,
then our economy suffers.
I know. I mean, there's no perfect
answer.
And
there'll be considerably less money for all the things you care about and I care
betting
about.
Betting companies. I mean, they're a pariah on the working class. It just makes my stomach turn. But I don't have a perfect answer.
Well, nor does he, you see. And that, to me, if you'd come at this from a slightly different angle, you could almost have been mounting a defence of him. But you're not. You're not. You're attacking him for not having a perfect answer to an imperfect world.
Yeah. I mean, I also have another theory about why he's so disliked.
Yeah, go
because,
on.
I mean, so, you know, Biden was massively disliked.
Yeah.
And there were reasons for that. He, you know, and Trump doesn't get the same scrutiny for his mental health and his age, et cetera, et cetera. And I've got a theory that if you're Labour or Democrat, somehow the public does believe you stand for good.
Yes.
And even if you are a Republican yourself or a Tory or whatever, you still believe that somewhere inside that the Labour and the Democrats are supposed to be the party that's helping people.
Yes.
So when you see someone like Biden or Keir Starmer not helping people, you have much higher standards. So you hold them to much higher standards than you would, for example, Boris Johnson, who you expect to be corrupt, you expect to lie, etc. It's almost like he's a headmaster or a parent. People expect him to be that stable, good person. When he lets
and,
them down,
and people on the right are desperate to prove that they're actually frauds and hypocrites, and people on the left are desperate to believe that they're not, and so that level of scrutiny ramps up accordingly from all corners and all angles. Because that is how you end up hearing apparently sentient human beings trying to compare £5 million secret donations or £1 million public donations in Boris Johnson's case from the same man after he was Prime Minister. Christopher Harborne bunged Boris Johnson £1 million. No questions asked, and you see and hear people trying to compare that to sort of spectacles and suits, and it's not entirely without foundation, because Keir Starmer should have been turning down offers of free suits and spectacles, not just turning down offers, had they ever existed, of millions and millions of pounds in his private current account or for his, quotes, office. Post-prime ministerial office, end quotes, which is where Boris Johnson was when he got his £1 million. Well, living in the back garden of the bloke that owns JCB. And Anna's right. I hate that she's right. Because it's not fair. You see it right across the media as well. You see people being held to much, much higher standards if they subscribe to decency publicly. Any evidence of tarnish or any evidence of bruises on their decency, their own decency, their own moral compass will be seized upon with an alacrity that barely applies to the people whose brand is immoral, to the people whose brand is greedy or racist or morally bankrupt. And I don't know what you can do about that. It would be nice, of course, if the media was a little bit more balanced, but it ain't. So it's all on Starmer for Anna, or at least most of it is. I'm not convinced, as I pointed out, unless you've got an answer to what he should have done differently, trying to ride two horses, because there are two horses for a Labour leader. You can't just say, right, we're looking after business and business will look after everybody else. If you're a Tory, you can pretend to believe in trickle-down economics. If you're Labour, you know that the relationship between taxation and the population is the single most important element of our democracy. If you're a Tory, you can kid yourself or truly believe, as everyone on Tufton Street seems to do, that just making the richest people in the world ever, ever, ever more richer will somehow be good for everybody else. John's in Fitzrovia. John, what would you like to say?
Well, really, at first of all, I wanted to emphasise the fact that I was taught many, many, many years ago, British decline started in 1870 against its competitors, and we've been going downhill ever since.
What happened in 1870?
It was the day we dropped down the league table against our major competitors, such as the States and Russia.
Do you know why? Was it sort of the end of the Industrial Revolution?
They were catching up,
yes,
and
okay.
They started to pass us.
Fair enough.
And they've been doing so ever since. And the empire bled us dry, effectively. We made less money out of the empire, at least as a nation, than it cost us to run it. And you see it all in that light. And then everything we see from then on you normally have to look back 20 or 30 years to get some idea of the time frame and then project forwards to the kind of solutions. And because we don't live in China, where you have 10, 20, 30-year plans.
And the rest,
You know, Starmer is 50, trying to do 100. This in 10 years, and that's a big ask.
Yeah.
In a society now that's media-driven, where they want to build up kind of crises, tensions, and so on, within... not during, within a 24-hour news cycle, or possibly less. And it places him in an almost impossible situation. And not only that, certain elements of the media, the usual suspects, are just going to come up with the same short critiques of him that's going to be repeated over and over again.
There's a bit chicken and egg, though. This is a little bit chicken and egg, because, you know, you cannot ignore what happened at the end of last week. And that may be partly a consequence of what you're describing, but the consequence becomes the story.
Yes.
I mean, it was a catastrophic set of results for Keir Starmer, and he has signally failed to do the one thing that everybody thought he was going to do, which is to stop the chaos, stop the internecine warfare, and stop the instability. Are you arguing, John, that no one could?
I think it's a big call for anybody.
I do too.
And all they can really do is effectively try and point people and say, look the other way, while they're trying to sort of patch things up. And unfortunately, that doesn't progress us very far. And then you've had long-term events and so on, which, you know, like, you know, Brexit back in 2016. We're 10 years on from that. But that was being effectively shaped by a number of forces, some outside this country, in order to effectively divide us, to get us out of Europe. And the damage has been done. The Russians were undermining our security services in the 20s, the 30s. People like Philby knew what was going on and were telling the Russians during the war. You know, they were at the heart of SOE, MI5, and all the secrets were out before we got them.
Western stability is something that is traditionally despised only by Russian leaders. Now, it seems to be American leaders and some British politicians who've got a massive problem with it as well. So you can't let him off the hook entirely. Two great opening callers, actually, because you've sort of set out two opposing stalls. He has to bear some... Somebody could... surely have done a better job than he has.
I think, yes. I think the trouble is he's not a politician. He's not
Harold
Wilson.
That's what we thought we wanted, isn't it?
You know, and because of that, he plays a fairly plodding role and doesn't try and effectively maximise the ability to play people off against each other within his own structure very, very, very skillfully. And as a result of that, he's living with consequences of that. And unfortunately, I don't really see anybody coming up in the wings who's likely to get the better of that, with possible exceptions. But I think
that's why I find myself where I am today, in thinking that, I mean, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement or a magnificent vote of confidence to say I'm not convinced that things can't get worse. So let's just leave them as they are, which is pretty flipping awful. But how inevitable is this awfulness? What would a more successful cessation or attempt to stop the chaos, the instability, the internecine warfare have looked like? I mean, you know, upsetting your core support seems to me to be a major misstep in the country, let alone in the Parliamentary Labour Party, the welfare cuts. But of course, he argued, and I'll remind you what he said, that you could not fix things until you'd cleared out the rot. And that was his defence of some of the things that turned out to be incredibly unpopular, so much so that he had to reverse on them. 10:32 is the time. Phone lines are open. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Wes Streeting, one of Sir Keir Starmer's potential leadership rivals, has held a very brief meeting with Sir Keir at Downing Street. The Prime Minister is resisting moves to oust him after 87 MPs urged him to go, and four ministers resigned yesterday. It comes ahead of the King's speech this lunchtime, in which Charles will set out the government's planned new laws for the next parliamentary session. 11 trade unions affiliated with the Labour Party have said that it's clear Sir Keir Starmer will not lead the party into the next general election. In a statement, they said plans will have to be put in place in the near future to elect a new leader. And the bodies of three women have been recovered from the sea off the coast of Brighton. Sussex police say the force is working to confirm their identities and to understand what happened. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for much of the UK through today. Windy in the southwest, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hear that? It's your big McDonald's hunger calling. And that's not just any kind of hunger. It's the kind that calls for the Big Arch. Stacked with juicy beef, cheddar cheese and that Big Arch sauce. Oh, and don't forget those crispy onions. Hungry? You are now. Serve from 11 a.m. subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Frockies, Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Joni Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 10:36. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I love it when worlds collide. My very good friend Gary is, I mean, it's almost an inadequate description of the work that he does. But technically he is a painter and decorator. For me, he's more of an artisan. And he was very, very struck by something I'd forgotten for reasons that will become clear. Keir Starmer, when talking about his plans in the very early days, said, "Let me inject some hope. The whole point of this exercise is to make sure we can bring about the change that we need. If you don't clear out the rot and don't do it properly, you've got nothing to build on, and therefore this is a vital step. If you're redecorating your house and you want it to look much nicer, it's usually better if you strip it down, get rid of the damp and the cracks first, rather than painting it in 5 minutes, thinking it looks much better, and by Christmas the cracks and the damp come back. So this is actually a project of hope, but it's got to start with the hard yards of doing the difficult stuff, of clearing out the rot first." I forget specifically what he was referring to at that moment, but he was talking about the broader project. It came shortly after the announcement that winter fuel allowance payments would go only to pensioners who were in receipt of pension credit, and before he was compelled or felt forced to U-turn on that policy. But I don't think even his most ardent fans would currently argue that he is delivering on that work in process. What was stripping down the old decor? What was the damp he sought to get rid of? The cracks he sought to fill in? I don't even know. I mean, maybe reducing the welfare bill, but even that was stymied by his own backbenchers. So how much of Keir Starmer's perceived failure is down to Keir Starmer, and how much of it is down to the context, the country as he governs? It's 10:38. Mark's in Milton Keynes. Mark, what do you think?
I think you're right. I think if you're implying it's down to personal style, I think you're on the money.
I'm not. I'm genuinely not sure, because I find it hard to answer the question of who would do better.
It is a tricky question. Yeah. But in terms of Keir Starmer, I mean, he spoke the other day, and he was hope was his key message.
Again.
And anyone who works in business knows that hope is not a strategy. Look at his personal style. And in terms of politics, When he first came in, when Corbyn left and he was leader of the opposition, my personal perspective was, thank goodness, there's someone who's potentially credible on the world stage representing us.
But he's delivered on that bit of it, on the world stage, I would argue, actually.
He says the right things. But look, getting into his style, apparent that he has no convictions, okay?
Yes.
I suspect the man's never had an original idea in his life.
That's probably a bit harsh.
Okay, but you,
but I take your point.
That's what he conveys. I think, as the director of public prosecutions and as a barrister, probably in the top 1% of 1% of administrators in the world, not enough for politics.
Why not?
To stop the rot, he's got to be able to think on his feet. He's got to be able to make quick decisions. Whereas his profession has always been about referring to the textbook, where's the legal statute, what should we do next? And barristers present and deliver messages. They parse every character, every comma in a piece of text.
I thought I wanted that, Mark. I thought I wanted sort of no drama, starmer, you know, sort of careful, plodding, dull, process-driven. I'm not convinced that it's a bad thing to want, actually. As long as you stick with the results of that process, that's what he's not. So I don't mind how you arrive at your conclusion. I'd much rather you arrived at your conclusion very, very carefully. But if you then abandon that carefully reached conclusion in a heartbeat, what's the flipping point of the process in the first place?
Couldn't draw back upon business planning and business strategy. You know, most CEOs of major corporations will say, my job is to say no to good ideas because we set the strategy at the beginning of the year and we're delivering upon it. We're not changing tack every 5 minutes.
No, and so there's two. I mean, it's slightly contradictory what you're saying because he has tried to do that, but then he has contradicted himself. So it's not a question of the absence of original ideas. I like the ploddingness, is what I'm saying. And a minute ago, you didn't. So we can agree. We'd probably rather have somebody very carefully arriving at a conclusion. But if they're not going to then stick with that conclusion, then everything is a waste of time. Everything is a mess, isn't it?
His plan was his manifesto. His direction was what he set out when he went in to become Prime Minister. And to take the country with him, he should have been delivering on what he said. Whether some of those decisions were deeply unpopular or not, but he should have said, this is why we're doing it, because this is where we're going. And that is that conviction that's missing, you see.
And sometimes the detail doesn't matter. A lot of conversation yesterday was about storytelling. They've delivered at least 20 of the manifesto pledges they made in 2024, getting rid of hereditary peers sitting in the House of Lords, abolishing the non-dom status, creating British energy, great British energy, scrapping VAT exemptions for private schools, recognising the state of Palestine, which is an important one because an awful lot of people who profess to hate him because of the perception that he hasn't done enough in opposition to Israel's actions in Gaza and recognition of the Palestinian state. So there's a little bit of him that's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. But I'm with Mark on the simple question of process. I disagree with Mark about the kind of mercurial nature of leadership. I don't think that you necessarily want the same skill set in a prime minister that you might want in a CEO of a company that either employs you or in which you hold a lot of shares. I prefer a prime minister not to be off the cuff and not to be too mercurial. But if you're going to praise someone for their process, for their ploddingness, then the last thing they should be doing is changing their mind on a sixpence. The last thing. So talk of U-turns, whether they are technically U-turns or exercises in listening or that misquote or that thing that John Maynard Keynes apparently never said about when the facts change, sir, I change my mind, what do you do? All of that works. All of that works. But not if the thing he was supposed to deliver was carefulness. You can't be carefulness and mind-changing. Not on this level. The one cancels out. This is important. That's a great contribution from Mark. It's clarifying things for me, and and that is on him. That's not down to the context in which he finds himself. Should he have styled it out? Should he have told his own backbenchers to do one? Should he have essentially flicked the bird at all the people complaining about the winter fuel allowance and stayed with it? Answer, yes, but 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing. Do we have any sound effects, Keith? That's a horse-drawn carriage. Horse-drawn carriage alert! I'll do my own sound effects, seeing as I never get any production. If Emily Makeless asked for a horse-drawn carriage alert, she'd probably have a full train of horses in the studio by 11 o'clock this morning. She'd probably ride in on one. She'd probably write... If Emily Makeless wanted a sound effect on her newsagent's podcast for the horse-drawn carriage alert that I'm now issuing in a very amateurish and lonely fashion, she'd probably be given an actual horse by the management in this building. But here I am doing a horse-drawn carriage alert. Trumpet alert. Trumpet alert. The trumpets are now playing. I think it's Knees Up Mother Brown. Is it Knees Up Mother Brown? No, it's not. Hang on, bear with me. Is it the Bryan Adams one from the Robin Hood film? No. That is the king in his golden carriage making his way. No, it's not. Who is it then? That's just a crown in a carriage. That's the imperial state crown in a carriage. Also the sword of state. The sword of state. And the imperial state crown making their way to Parliament in their own carriages. Drawn by horses and accompanied by the plaintive wail of trumpets or possibly cornets. All those really long, thin ones that I don't know the name of. At least I'm honest. Everybody else pretends they know what everything is and what's going on. Is it a bugle? Am I talking about? No, a bugle's smaller. A bugle is like a small trumpet without any pushy buttons on it. I think. I don't know. Really, but here we are, marking the moment with the requisite solemnity and seriousness. I'm definitely not trying desperately to think of things that rhyme. More on that after this.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whether it's through Brexit, whether it's through immigration, whether it's through the economy, whether it's through the tailwinds of the 2008 financial crisis and the fact that GDP per capita has been falling, no one's been getting any richer, growth has been incredibly sluggish for over a decade, we get this political upheaval time and time and time again.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelt out my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, more people are switching to cartridgepeople.com. Like Max, whose kids have discovered printable colouring sheets. And now, there's no going back. And Jen, a business owner who wants printer cartridges so economical, she can print herself a pay rise. For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, switch to cartridgepeople.com. T's and C's apply. See online for our price promise.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:48 is the time. My thanks to Patrick, who has informed us that the long, thin trumpet is in fact called a strumpet. So it was the plaintive wail of the strumpet that accompanied the passage of the sword of state and the imperial crown of state up the mall. Always sounds a little bit indecent to me, but that is where they are and what they're doing. Listen, I'm not making this up. Here it is live. Who's that sniffing? That wasn't me, by the way. Just so you know, was that you, Keith? Have you invaded the feed? Sounded a little bit like Velcro there. Just a little bit of background noise from the crowd. We are having a radio phone-in about the state of British politics, but it's interesting how many people think that things like this, moments like this, sum up the state of Britain. Here's a couple of examples in the same moment. Alex writes, "It sounds beautiful, though, James, even if it is ridiculous." And Chris, in the same moment, wrote, "Hi, James, this nonsense is everything that's wrong with the UK. I just thought I would mention it." Well, I'm glad you did, Chris, because somebody has to. "As I get older, I quite like it, but I wouldn't read too much into that if I were you." And Tim's been in touch to say, "Please ask James to define internecine." Well, I'm happy to. Internecine is tribal warfare, internecine warfare. It comes from the Latin. I'm not actually making this up. I'll be making up most of the things that I share with you in the course of the pageantry building up to the King's Speech. For example, it's not really called a strumpet, but I'm going to pretend that I believe that because my inbox gets interested. People will tune in and say, "Why on earth is O'Brien calling it a strumpet? I never listened to this show. I've just tuned in by accident. Is he still going on about Brexit and strumpets?" I am not making this up. Necus, N-E-C-U-S, is the Latin word for tribe. And from necus comes nisine, N-E-C-I-N-E. So internecine means within the tribe. Not intranecine, which would be tribes against each other, but internecine becomes tribal warfare. So family warfare, the family fighting each other. Which brings us, of course, to James the First. Who was king in 1605 when the gunpowder plot was discovered, which is why at this moment the yeomen of the guard, otherwise known I think as beefeaters, although I could have got that wrong, will be conducting or have recently concluded a ceremonial search of the cellars of the Palace of Westminster for explosives. A little nod there to that gunpowder plot of 1605 in which a group of English Catholics failed to blow up the House of Lords and kill the Protestant king. And a shout, not that it's worth it because they'll all be in the exam hall now, so a shout to the parents of the young people who have started their A-levels today. Because if you're doing A-level English and King Lear was one of your set texts, you'll probably be nodding towards King James and some of the coded references in King Lear to King James's reign. But good luck to all the kids who are in there, but also to the parents who are dealing with it. 10:51 is the time. How much of the mess in which Keir Starmer finds himself is Keir Starmer's fault? Answer so far, quite a lot. And yes, the media is feral. And yes, we are all addicted to psychodrama. And yes, we use the word psychodrama far too much in political coverage. And yes, we are part of the problem by talking about it. But yes, the election results at the end of last week mean that most of this is justified. Okay? So how much of it is on him? How much of the failure to stop the drama is down to Keir Starmer, who's not a farmer, and this isn't karma. John's in Stafford. John, what would you like to say?
Well, firstly, I think you've just out-dimbled me. Dimbledy.
Thank you Dimbledy. Very much, John. I am available for all such engagements and assignments.
And we now know where the strumpet comes from.
Yes,
so
yes,
that would have been a question for tomorrow.
A fascinating moment of British pageantry, I felt.
I think with regards to Keir Starmer, I think the writing was on the wall from the moment of the donkey sanctuary.
Yeah, okay.
And they're having to dig so deep to try and find something to criticise and critique him over that then moving into government, and virtually the first thing he has to deal with is the Farage riots.
Yes.
And he dealt with it very sternly and very efficiently using the laws of the land, as you would expect somebody of his standing within the legal profession to do so.
Yeah, that's true.
That rubbed up a lot of people of the other persuasion, of the right, in completely the wrong way, and then we start getting the bombast about no free speech in the UK and two-tier here. And whereas you have somebody from his profession who is prepared to, has to listen to argument and make decisions based on those arguments, if the arguments coming into him are not all correct and are various persuasions, he's going to make a choice of who do I go with. At a major incident, an incident commander will have heads from each section of that.
Of course.
And they will come to him with the facts. And he will need to make a decision about that incident and how it's going to go forward. Things will always change. And in this world, at this moment in time, things that are changing around us on a daily, on a minute-by-minute basis, especially with what's gone on across the Atlantic.
Yes.
He showed his true colours and he showed his determination not to be drawn into something that was going against Leveson. It was going against everything that we didn't want to see, or whereas, quite the right way around, whereas certain tribal elements within our politics would have had those body bags coming back.
He's got that absolutely right. And anybody saying otherwise would be on Donald Trump's side during a conversation maligning our war dead from Afghanistan, which, of course, Donald Trump did without receiving a single syllable of criticism from the usual suspects. But I'm thinking about incident commanders. Once they've made a decision, and in the absence of anything changing, to then change your mind is catastrophic. So I'm thinking about winter fuel payments or even the welfare cuts. Whatever you might personally think about them, he made a decision and then he backtracked on that decision, which is the worst of all imaginable worlds.
It is, but...
From a leadership perspective, because you can do the, you know, well, he realised he'd made a mistake, so he changed course, defence, which is valid, but from a leadership perspective, it's disastrous.
But you need to have a leader who's prepared to listen. And who is not afraid.
But then, but like you said, you listen before you make the announcement.
And then you hope that the hope word is obviously quite relevant, that everything goes in the way that it would do or should do based on the current information that you've got. But other things then interject and change the course of events. And, okay, let's try and keep Trump on side, we got the lowest tariffs.
Yeah, a fat lot of good that did us in the long run, but it was the right thing to do at the time. Absolutely categorically.
But of course those tariffs have now been overturned, so there are going to be refunds, and most of those people that were affected by them, well, they've got the legal cases in ready to, you know, to see what happens with that. Even as far as the Mandelson appointment, you have the likes of Dan Rhodes, just saying how wonderful.
Everyone thought it was wonderful.
What a good pragmatic move it was.
Yeah.
Until, of course, it wasn't.
No, and now it gets dredged up by people who were cheering it from the rafters as proof of what a wrong and Keir Starmer is, which is, again, evidence of epic hypocrisy and Labour leaders. And Zach Polanski is being held to a much higher account at the moment than Nigel Farage, for example. Despite both of them having questions to answer, Farage's question's much bigger than Polanski's. They should both be held to at least equal and opposite accounts. Starmer will be held to a much higher account than anybody, and never more so than when people who decided that the appointment of Peter Mandelson was a stroke of political genius are now absolutely convinced that they knew all along, and it proved beyond any reasonable doubt that Starmer was an idiot for putting Mandelson in that role in the first place. But you're giving him too much credit. I mean, you must hold him responsible for some of the mess that he finds himself in.
Well, at the end of the day, that well-worn phrase, there has to be a certain level of responsibility. He's going to have to do that. But if he can hold his hands up and say, mea culpa, okay, yes, it was the wrong decision, but this is what we're going to do to resolve it. And that's what you want, is that it just doesn't hold his hands up and say, okay, well, I haven't got a clue. Who's going to do what? There should be a plan put in place. And with the processes that he's had to deal with, i.e. over the Mandelson and the necessary investigations that were done re-Mandelson, and the fact that he didn't get to know about it, and all of these areas of government that have clearly been going on from the year dot, or somebody put them in place, are going to have to be revisited and redone so that we don't have these kind of
And we're back. We're back to Gary. We're back to Gary and his fond memory of the decorating analogy and the importance of getting everything ready before you start redecorating. And you know, I suppose Starmer's defence would be that we're still in the business of filling the cracks and stripping down the old decor. But of course, that puts enormous pressure on whatever it is that they do next. John, what a great call! What wonderful calls today. And we'll carry on with this, I suspect, until the King starts talking. Time now for an update. Someone just sneezed. I felt a very patriotic sneeze, though. Very patriotic sneeze. Regal, almost. The King, I think, is still in bed. Oh, he's having a crafty fag around the back of the palace before the carriage turns up. Someone just coughed. What you've got now is the Yeoman of the Guard lining the... That's Westminster Hall, right? I haven't got my glasses on. That was a mistake. That's something that David Dimbleby would never forget, his glasses at a moment. I've got sunglasses. Would that look ridiculous? But they've got a prescription lens in them, so I can probably see. Oh, now the picture's changed. No, there's benches there, so that's the House of Lords, is it? Did you just see Lord Timpson? We like him. Yeah, we like him. He's been on full disclosure. They're all waiting now, patiently, in the House of Lords for... Not for the King, who's not actually left the palace yet. They're waiting for the crown, which is being carried to the robing room on a special cushion. It's a technical term. You should see the training manual for this. That clinking you can hear is the guard's swords. Correct term, I believe, is clinkifying on the steps of the steps of the staircase. The crown. Do we know where the sword of state is at the moment? Is the sword of state all right? Is the sword of state with the crown? No word yet on the sword of state. So they're all crammed into the House of Lords. I believe the sword of state is just behind. No. Where have the fellas gone with the sort of ostrich feathers on their heads? They accompany it just to the main door, do they? At some point, Black Rod hits a door. I don't think anyone's actually gone missing. I think this is all as scheduled and as planned. But I don't know what happened to the blokes with the really... What's the word I want? Frou-frou. The really frou-frou hats. Oh, hang on. They're coming. Here's the sword. Everyone relax. The sword is safe. The sword of state is safe. And here it comes. I tell you what, you think I'm bad? You should see the subtitles accompanying the BBC's coverage. A dancer and wearing this kind of garb, and sometimes we did, was a matter of hairpins, sort of extraordinary, even just to keep the wigs on. Yeah, so you should count your lucky stars that you've got my coverage. Not these people at the BBC who actually know what they're talking about. We cross live now to Buckingham Palace, which sits, of course, in the City of London. Not the City of London with a capital C, but the City of London with a small C. The City of London. Renowned throughout the world. Because it's where Shakira Law is practiced by the residents. The King has now left the palace in his golden carriage with the very big wheels. How many carriages does the King have, I wonder? But he can only use one at a time. As that great sage of our era, J.K. of Jamiroquai, once observed, when he was criticised for simultaneously being an environmental campaigner and the owner of several high-performance sports cars, he responded winningly, "But I can only drive one at a time, so what's the problem?" So it is with the King's carriage. Does it matter how many he has? He can only occupy one at a time. Members of the Household Cavalry Mounted Regiment now escorting the King from Buckingham Palace to the Houses of Parliament. One of Queen Victoria's favourite carriages, that one, by the way. I just read that on the screen. I don't know if it's true. And how will we ever find out? Who is here to contradict us, given that Queen Victoria is sadly no longer with us? And hasn't been for about 128 years, give or take. Check Wikipedia. Note to self. Would you like some news? Do you feel it would be appropriate to interrupt this moment of epic solemnity and regal significance? Yes, I think it would be. Here comes the news.
on your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Keir Starmer has arrived at Parliament ahead of the King's speech as he continues to defy calls to resign. Keir met with Wes Streeting, one of his potential leadership rivals, at Downing Street earlier this morning. Pressure's building on the Prime Minister after 87 MPs urged him to go and four ministers resigned yesterday. Paymaster General Nick Thomas-Simmons told LBC that he believes moves to unseat Keir will now end.
Look, I'm not denying we've had turbulence, Nick. We've seen that. I'm not going to insult your viewers' intelligence by saying anything other about the last few days. But there's clear rules about triggering a leadership contest. You need those 81 names behind one person. That hasn't happened.
The SNP says it'll try to force a vote on the Prime Minister's future in the coming days. The party's new Westminster leader, Dave Dugan, says the leadership circus can't go on any longer. Former leader of the Scottish National Party and First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, says Keir has to consider his next moves carefully.
There always has to be an assessment in your mind. Is me staying in this role right for the country? Because you're not there for your own sake. Although, obviously, people have ambitions to be in these positions. You're there to govern the country in the best interests of the country overall.
In the last few minutes, as you've been hearing with James, King Charles left Buckingham Palace to make his way to Westminster to set out the government's legislative agenda for the next parliamentary session. You can hear the King's speech live and in full with James from 11:30 here on LBC. In other news, Ofcom says it has fined the provider of an online suicide forum £950,000 for breaching the UK's Online Safety Act. It follows an LBC investigation into the forum last year, which has been linked to at least 135 deaths in the UK. The online regulator says its provider now has 10 days to take action to make safeguarding changes. The bodies of three women have been recovered from the sea off the coast of Brighton. Sussex police say the force is working to confirm their identities and to understand what happened. And President Trump's heading to Beijing on the first trip to China by a US leader since he last visited in 2017. His talks with President Xi Jinping are likely to focus on the war in Iran, trade and Taiwan. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 43 at 10,303. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for much of the UK. Windy in the southwest, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 7 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, as you heard in the news bulletin, we will be taking the King's speech live shortly after 11:30 this morning, I imagine. Natasha will be joining me just before that to set the scene. I mean, it is the legislative programme for the next Parliament, so there could be a couple of rabbits being pulled out of the policy hat. I don't know. Goodness knows Keir Starmer at the moment needs all the help he can get. And he didn't really announce anything substantive in the speech on Monday morning that was widely regarded as a sort of career-saving intervention. And it didn't work, because his career hasn't been saved. He might still be Prime Minister, but we're still talking about how long that situation will sustain. And that leads us to the question we've been asking this morning, which is how much of this mess is his fault? And how much is just evidence of Brexit Britain no longer being a serious country? To be fair, the signs have been there for ages. A country in which Jacob Rees-Mogg could be taken seriously. Before Brexit, nobody would take Jacob Rees-Mogg seriously. Except possibly Jacob Rees-Mogg. And I'm not even sure that's true, to be honest with you. I don't think Jacob Rees-Mogg took himself seriously until Brexit came along. And we started, for reasons that I've chronicled tirelessly, treating people who didn't know what they were talking about as equal and opposite equivalents to people who knew what they were talking about. And we're still there now. Starmer, someone who knew what he was talking about, was supposed to stop the madness, or at least some of it, and he hasn't. Is that his fault? Is it because he lacks a very particular set of skills? Or was it an inevitable consequence of the broader context? For the record, if you're just tuning in, I think a lot of it is on him. And my callers so far have been divided, with a preponderance leaning towards he couldn't really have done things very differently, which I do disagree with. Wayne is in Kingsbridge in Devon. Wayne, what would you like to say?
I think that you're probably right on both counts. It's a combination of the two, isn't it? He's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. We live in a world now where we can scroll our finger from the bottom of our phone upwards and get the next bit of dopamine hit. It's instant. We can order online. We can get the stuff delivered straight away the next day, in some cases within an hour. We are impatient people now. But he inherited a country where essentially everything was just knocked down to its bare bones. If you take the house analogy, he inherited blank, empty trenches where foundations should be. And he's now supposedly have built those foundations up.
Yes.
And now he's got to do the big job of actually building something on top of those foundations. Yes. And he doesn't have the luxury of doing it in quick time.
No. That's a really interesting analysis, because it hinges on the question, doesn't it, which I can't answer, of whether or not he thinks he is doing a good job of getting those foundations in place, because they're invisible. To take the analogy to Breaking Point, Wayne, you can't see the foundations, so you can't be sure they're there until the big bad wolf comes along and starts huffing and puffing.
Exactly, which is difficult. So he has to now prove that he can get his hands involved, that he can micromanage for a while, which, you know, it's been claimed by many people that he is quite hands-off in his management style and lets his ministers and secretaries of state get on with their job as intended. But he's got a manifesto to deliver, and he doesn't have enough time to do that delivery if he's not careful. And if he has indeed seen off this challenge to his leadership, now is the time where he needs to prove that he is a passionate man, that he can deliver stuff. That stuff's been trained out of him. Barristers do not show huge amounts of passion. They show facts in front of them, and that is that.
Well, some do. So, no, that's not true. I mean, it's the only hole I'm going to pick in your analysis so far. But some barristers are very theatrical. I went to see Paul Dacre giving evidence in the latest phone hacking trial, and the barrister who is leading on that is a very theatrical character. David Sherborne, I think his name is. It was a pleasure to watch. It was like being at the theatre, albeit that I don't know what I'm allowed to say legally about. Yeah, I was in the public gallery. Paul Dacre just sat there looking very cowed and small. But the barrister was. But anyway, I digress. I mean, some barristers are very, what's the word I want? Flamboyant. Wait,
okay,
flamboyant.
So perhaps I've worded it a little bit wrong. He deals in facts and facts only.
Yes.
And presents the facts only. And sometimes the feelings can get removed when all you're focusing on is the facts.
Yeah, I guess.
And meanwhile, his opponents and the likes of Farage and Polanski, that they all have this way of delivering that excites people one way or another. And we don't get that from Keir. And we don't necessarily need it, but we need to feel like progress is being made at a pace that is what we need.
Yeah, and then the personal crashes headlong into the political, because 15 years ago, we didn't need it. We didn't need our politics when, you know, when David Cameron and Gordon Brown were, was it David Cameron and Gordon Brown to start with? Yeah, it was, wasn't it? When one was Prime Minister and one was leader of the opposition. There was no love lost between them, but there was no need for dopamine hits or warfare or any of those things. The world felt very different because they were on opposing teams that all agreed what the rules were.
But the rules have changed.
The rules have blown up, mate. The rules have
gone. The Overton window has moved drastically.
Very much.
You know, William Pitt the Younger, his world is totally different to what Boris Johnson and Thatcher had. So we have to move with the times, and politicians need to move somewhat with it and present in a way that is palatable. I see so many people on my social media, particularly on Facebook, calling for him to go. But they're getting the hit from getting angry about something. And they don't really know what they're getting angry about.
And they don't know why they want him to go particularly, or what will be better if he does. It's just, get rid of him. Yeah. And also, I think social media, and I obviously am a slightly weird person on this front because I've got this job and I don't need the kick of social media to sort of validate myself. But I would if I didn't have this job, and it validates everybody, you know. You can post absolute jibber-jabber on there and get 10 million likes and feel that you're the most brilliant commentator. Some of the stuff I've read over the years about myself, never mind other people, that is so utterly devoid of reality, so utterly removed from reality. But if you get 10,000 likes for it, or even, look, if your life is a little... If you get 10 likes for it, it's more than you've ever got before. 10 likes I got for slagging off James O'Brien. 10 likes I got for slagging off Keith on Twitter. That's incredible. I'm going to do a lot more of that. I'm going to... Oh, well, that lie... And everyone feels like they matter now. And in a way, that should be a good thing. But if people like Elon Musk are rewarding you for lying or for being racist or for being bigoted, then... It's obviously not a good thing at all. And I mention that because Wayne leads us into the contemplation of why Keir Starmer is personally so incredibly unpopular. And I think a lot of that has to come from social media. But for me, the best illustration of it comes via Israel, actually, because Keir Starmer is hated by the left for being what they describe as complicit in genocide. And yet he is hated by defenders of Israel's genocide for standing up to it. That is an almost impossible situation for a politician to have found themselves in. There was a march of solidarity for Jewish people in Britain at the weekend, and a lot of the coverage, and again, I don't know whether the coverage was fair, but a lot of the coverage suggested that a huge amount of energy was expended on hating Keir Starmer. On chanting or shouting dislike for, disapproval of, hatred of Keir Starmer. And yet, of course, on the left of British politics, he is, quotes, hated, end quotes, because he has been complicit in the genocide for the people on that side of the fence. So normally I like centrism. It's the politics of compromise. It's the politics of the possible, as opposed to the impossible. But sometimes when you find yourself in the centre of a situation, getting abuse from that side and for that side, while they are in complete disagreement with each other, you don't know how much of that is on the person caught in the crossfire from both sides and how much of it is a consequence of the context in which he finds himself. And that's the question that we're asking today. How many of Keir Starmer's problems are Keir Starmer's fault? And how much of the situation in which he finds himself in is down to the situation in which he finds himself in. And you won't find a better example than that. 03456060973 is the number if you want to join in. Let's just have a quick listen to the carriage. That's the House of Lords, where they await the King. Do we have a feed of the... it's a strumpet. King and Queen are now arriving. That is, that I just called to say I love you by Stevie Wonder. No, hang on, it'll come to me. It's the Firestarter by the Prodigy, I think. Yeah, it was Firestarter by the Prodigy being played on the strumpet. That has been a tradition now since about 1991. Prior to that, the strumpet would play "My Old Man's a Dustman." He wears a dustman's hat. He took me round the corner to watch a football match. The King is now exiting the carriage. Obviously ladies first. So here comes the Queen. Resplendent. That's all, just resplendent. In a lovely crown. Oh, that is a nice crown. And here comes the King, who's put a shift in lately. I know it's relative, and you'd happily swap places with him in many ways. But here he is, putting in another shift. Queen moves, glides, I would say, glides effortlessly to his side. David Lammy is wearing a wig and leading the procession up the stairs. Going to take a little break, I think, and then return to proceedings imminently. It's 11:18.
LBC.
Diary, what time's my Specsavers eye test?
Hi, Miriam. It's in 15 minutes. Would you like directions?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Exit the bedroom, pass the dog's basket, sit at the kitchen table. You have arrived.
Mm.
Enough time to move pickles. Visitors do make him frisky.
Some people can't get to Specsavers unaccompanied. That's why we offer home visits. Home visits from
Miriam's Journey.
Savers.
Down pickles.
Geographical restrictions apply. Find out if you're eligible online.
From countryside escapes to seaside breaks and plenty of open road in between, there's a Mazda for every kind of summer. Get 0% APR on selected models when ordered by the 30th of June and keep your mind on the really important stuff, like trying to eat that ice cream before it melts. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 30th of September 2026. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 19 minutes after 11. I think I got my intras and my intros mixed up. I do apologise. I was sounding so clever as well when I was answering the question about what internecine warfare is and drawing on me Latin, which I haven't studied since 1988, but some of it sticks. And I got all of that bit right, but I think inter is one tribe against another and intra is when it's within the same tribe. So when you're talking about the Labour Party tearing itself to shreds, it could be both, couldn't it? It could be internecine warfare, because they are different tribes within the same party, or it could be intranecine warfare, because they are technically within the same tribe and or party. But I think I prefer internecine warfare, because it's tribes within the Labour Party, but I explained that wrong a moment ago. I may have some very significant breaking news for you in the next couple of minutes. So as I introduce Kai in Hornsey to the programme, I caution him that he may be interrupted with that breaking news, or indeed with a particularly gusting blast of the strumpet. Kai, what would you like to say?
Wow, we're on tenterhooks then for this call.
Yeah, see what I do? It's like I've done this before, mate. I'm building up a little bit. It'll probably go out like a burst balloon. But anyway, here we are.
James, can I just say that going up the steps of the staircase is peak O'Brien commentary. That's, you know, John Watson, eat your heart out.
Thank you very much. Yes, I've been on a course.
yeah, I'm in Hornsey, so obviously I'm at ground zero of Catherine West's specific omni-shambles of this political week. Yeah, I basically wanted to just call in with something quite simple. And I mean, it's been mentioned before, and you've had so many callers that have spoken about personality politics.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that we're living, unfortunately, regrettably at the moment, in the age of the strongman in the UK, in the US, in so much of Western politics. And Keir Starmer is just seen as weak.
Mm.
The problem is that when you're seen as weak, your message, whatever your message is, isn't going to cut through. And he doesn't really have many messages that cut through anyway. And I think the problem is that people see being a strong man or being a strong person, a strong character, as something that has to be inherently conservative or right-wing. And that's because most strong people that we've seen in the last decade, be it Trump or Farage or even Boris Johnson, have been
But none of them are strong. I mean, I know that you're using the phrase as a figure of speech, but they are.
Yes.
That's a sort of cavalcade of pathetic children that you've just described there.
That's with true.
Thin
absolutely.
Skin, and they pretend to be. I mean, that it's populism that you're describing.
Absolutely. But I think it's people are equating the how specific and how targeted their messaging is with having a strong message.
Well, this is why the question is whether or not Keir Starmer could do anything differently, because he's never going to become a populist.
No, he's
never going to become a racist liar. He's never going to become a climate change denier or a misogynist. He's flirted with some of the right-wing positions, and it's made everything worse, not better. So when you look at the mess he's currently in, is it a consequence of context or a consequence of character?
Well, I think the thing is, I mean, I'm not a fan of Jeremy Corbyn. I'm a Labour member. I mean, I've never been a fan of Corbyn, but I would put Corbyn in the same bracket in terms of the strength of character and the strength of his message. Now, mm-hmm. the thing is, with all of these characters, whether you want to look at...
But he was also, I mean, he's also susceptible to accusations of populism.
Absolutely, indeed. But I think the key thing is, as soon as you have someone that has sort of strength of message, they seem to garner respect.
Strength of message versus strength of character. That's interesting, because, exactly. I mean, you use the word weak to describe Keir Starmer. I don't think he is. As we've seen over Iran more than anything else, but it's about perceptions, isn't it? It's not about policies or people sometimes. It's about perceptions. Natasha Clark is here with, and, you know, I know I'm being a little bit facetious and flippant today with regards to the King's speech in Parliament, but this is a very serious moment, potentially.
Yes, potentially, James. So we've just had, in the last few minutes, some news from allies of Wes Streeting. According to the Times newspaper, he's told allies, which we think are MPs, that he is preparing to resign and trigger a leadership contest as soon as tomorrow. So we've been discussing here on LBC for the last sort of 24 hours about whether this day of the King's speech had meant that all politicians would be putting aside their differences and putting aside everything, sort of this Westminster speculation about Keir Starmer's future to one side for the day. But it seems like that's not the case, isn't it? And we had that meeting earlier between the Prime Minister and Wes Streeting. We know he
was... Which was notably short. It had a distinct air of Streeting being told to sling his hook, I felt.
I think that's probably fair. And like I say, we haven't had a readout from Number 10. We don't know from Wes Streeting's side either what was said between the pair, but what we do know is what he was preparing to say ahead of time. We know they were planning to have a leadership conversation. We know that Wes Streeting had tried to do that after Cabinet and was told, sorry guys, come back later. And it's clear that he hasn't been happy, at least according to these reports, because of what he has heard. That he was in Number 10 for just 16 minutes this morning, so incredibly rapid meeting. We should say that obviously, you know, the Prime Minister's a busy man. It's probably not unusual that he has 10-minute meetings.
But King's speech today as well.
Exactly, he's got enough on.
It's a blank day in the diary, but this would appear, and this is from, is it Stephen Swinford at the time?
Yeah, it's from Aubrey Allegretti and Patrick Maguire at the Times.
Okay.
So, and I have...
Very, very well connected journalist.
Exactly, and so we have heard that there, and I have, to be fair, having conversations with MPs that are close to Wes Streeting, so some of his allies, and so I've put this to them, not sort of had that response yet.
Okay.
But one Streeting ally who's spoken to the Times says he is going to go for it. He is going tomorrow. So it could be that we are in for a 24-hour truce and then all hell might break loose tomorrow.
Does he fight?
He's going to fight. I absolutely am confident that the Prime Minister is absolutely going to fight.
So he could end up making everything worse in a way. Or not. I mean, who knows at times like this, really.
Mm. And, I mean, his allies were quite confident last night that he doesn't have the numbers, because we've obviously seen, what, around 90 MPs come out and call for the Prime Minister to go. We don't imagine that all of them will be supporters of Wes Streeting. But there's quite a lot of MPs we haven't heard from, isn't there? We've had, you know, 100 on one side, 100 on the other side. Well, that does leave the other 200, and we don't know exactly what they think.
Is it feasible for Streeting, given that the membership of the Labour Party reputedly holds him in quite low regard? He's seen very much as a figure of the right of the party, or the membership leans partly as a consequence of Jeremy Corbyn's period in charge of the party and the number of people that joined them, but historically it leans a lot further to the left than where Streeting is seen as doing. Because he wouldn't be allowed, would he be allowed a clear path?
I don't think he will be allowed a clear path.
I don't mean by Keir Starmer, I mean by other candidates. Because if he is the only one against Keir Starmer, he's got a much better chance than if other hats start heading ringwards.
Well, what we've heard in terms of from Angela Rayner and in terms of sort of other MPs, including there was a report as well in the press in the last 24 hours saying that, you know, Ed Miliband could be prepared to stand as the soft left candidate. Angela Rayner has also made it clear that if Wes Streeting goes, she's going to go too. They don't want someone from that winning of the party. And like you say, he is seen as being too right-wing for the Labour Party. So
75% certain this story's kosher. I mean, it could be that they are being told this, but that Streeting hasn't actually inked it yet and will change his mind. But I mean, they wouldn't have gone public. I know those two journalists, and they wouldn't have gone public with this unless they were dead certain of their...
Yeah, like I say, it sounds like an MP that has spoken to the paper who says that he is going to do so. But equally, I mean, look, he's been weighing this up for a long time. This would, if this is true, this is a huge change in position for him, because Wes Streeting has repeatedly said, and I was speaking to MPs and allies of his yesterday that said, we're not going to pull that trigger. We don't want to do that. So...
We're dropping the news, largely because Natasha has just brought you the biggest political story of the moment, but mostly, but also, of course, because the King is now making his way through the House of Lords, accompanied by his wife, the Queen. Is it Bring Your Wife to Work Day today, or is that just for him? Is it? No, just for him. And page boys, various page boys. And some of these outfits are absolutely magnificent. They're a little bit sort of late era Michael Jackson, aren't they? An awful lot of jewellery. Brocade is a wonderful word that you don't really hear very often except on days like today. And epaulettes. I don't know that I've ever worn an epaulette, but I aspire to one day wearing epaulettes. Epaulettes and brocade, not to mention crowns. Two crowns, one for the king, the other, of course, for the queen. Everyone's looking very serious. Where do they find the little boys? Do we know? You boy! What day is it? Well, it's King's Speech Day, sir. I don't know where they find the little boys, but and he's making his way to the big old chair where he will sit down and deliver the King's speech. Oh, it's pomp and ceremony. No one else in the world does it like this, but if someone started doing it like this, we'd think they were stark staring mad. And Donald Trump probably watches this and wonders why he's not allowed to have this kind of event or this kind. Why can't I have a crown? Why can't I have ermine? Why can't I have epaulettes and lots of medals? But it would be very, very odd if this were to be sort of instituted from a standing start. And now the assembled throngs of politicians from both houses rise to their feet as the King makes his way into the chamber, led by a nice-looking fella carrying a very large pole. Here he is. This is oddly a feed from the House of Commons now, but the King is, of course, in the House of Lords. But I suppose it's closer than I am, so we may as well listen to that for a moment or two. The King is now sitting down, as is the Queen. The mysterious page boys. I bet David Dimbleby would know where they came from. Where is David Dimbleby when you need him? And I think they usually say some prayers. I think they say the prayers before he sits down. I could be wrong. That's a whopping old train, though, he's got. It's like a big, long ermine and velvet, like what a bride would have, rolling out from behind the King's robes. Now waiting for the signal there, given by the Lord Great Chamberlain. It's a good title. That's a signal to Black Rod. There it comes. We will now head to the House of Commons. This is the bit I could remember, where you get to see the body language. It's not impossible that Cammy Badenoch we'll do a lap of honour at this point around the entire Houses of Parliament while shouting, "I'm the best, I'm the best, I'm Cammy Badenoch, I'm the best." Although tradition dictates that she will walk somberly alongside the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who, as Natasha has just told us, may not be having a good day. That's the sound of Black Rod banging the door. Little chuckle there, someone listening to this coverage with a surreptitiously placed earpiece. And the door opens. Doors plural. Black Rod makes his way into the House of Commons.
This noble house, King commands to attend His Majesty immediately in the House of Peers.
The King commands, is what he is saying. I don't know how we've managed to lose the feed there. The King commands this noble house to attend His Majesty immediately. Oh, you heard that, in the House of Peers. I think some of the pictures are running a tiny little bit ahead of some of the audio. And now is the moment where all of the MPs get to their feet and make their way to the House of Lords. The door being slammed in the face of Black Rod is a mark of the independence of the House of Commons. Something that I presume goes back to Charles I, or at least Charles II, of course. And they're off. The MPs now making their way in a sort of slightly higgledy-piggledy fashion from the House of Commons towards the House of Lords. trying to see the key players, if I can. There's an awful lot of lavishly clad attendants in place. There they are. Cammy Badenoch and Keir Starmer chatting away quite amiably. Diane Abbott immediately behind Keir Starmer because she is, of course, the mother of the house. And I told you I wouldn't recognise faces. Who's the old... Is that Edward Lee? Is it? God, well done me. That was Edward Lee, the father of the house, which just means they're the oldest. Or the is it the oldest or the longest serving? Longest serving. Lady and man, woman and man, the mother and father. I don't want to read too much into this, but Cammy Badenoch was chatting away there. Keir Starmer didn't look riveted, but he has quite possibly got an awful lot on his mind at the moment, i.e. a leadership challenge incoming from Wes Streeting, as our political editor Natasha Clark shared with us just a moment ago. And we are going to take the speech in its entirety. I won't interrupt it. I don't think that would be appropriate. What is the likelihood of there being, Natasha, major pronouncements in this speech, like major movements, major moments, stuff that perhaps some people were waiting for on Monday morning but didn't materialise?
Yeah, I mean, from what we understand of it and what the government has told us overnight is going to be in it, I don't think this is going to be a groundbreaking King speech. I don't think it's going to say a lot more that we didn't already know was going to be in it. Reform to the NHS, police reform, immigration reforms already set out by the government in many ways. I'm sure there will be something in it that's a little bit new. Keir Starmer gave us a flavour, didn't he? He said it was going to be the nationalisation of British Steel Bill, which was going to be coming as part of this King's speech. But 35 bills is nothing to be sniffed. That's quite a lot of legislation to try to get passed. Of course, they've got as well lots of other things they didn't manage to finish as well in the last session. Things like the Hillsborough Law, for example, managed not to get on the statute book. So there's a lot of things that this government keeps saying that it wants to do, but I don't think there's going to be any major surprises, I don't think, in there. One of the things that I was being told was being drawn up was as a bill specifically about Europe and closer alignment with Europe. I think we will probably expect to see something there, but whether it will be ripping up the Labour Party's red lines on the single market and customs union...
It doesn't really matter anyway, because they can pronounce anything they want, really, on Europe. It's up to Europe what we can and can't get now, so...
True. That's absolutely true, but it would be a sign, and I think there were some Labour MPs over the weekend saying, you know, something really bold, like saying, you know, like Sadiq Khan has said, let's go back into the EU, might be enough to shift Labour's
fortunes. David Lammy, and some people will find this a little bit hard to swallow, David Lammy down on one knee there in front of the King, handing
My
over
Lords
the speech, and here
and
it comes.
Members of the House of Commons, an increasingly dangerous and volatile world threatens the United Kingdom, with the conflict in the Middle East only the most recent example. Every element of the nation's energy, defence and economic security will be tested. My government will respond to this world with strength and aim to create a country that is fair for all. My ministers will take decisions that protect the energy, defence and economic security of the United Kingdom for the long term. They will defend the British values of decency, tolerance, and respect for difference under our common flag. And they will harness the potential of the pride felt across this country for its communities. My government will take urgent action to tackle anti-Semitism and ensure all communities feel safe. My government believes that the United Kingdom's economic security depends on raising living standards in every part of the United Kingdom. My ministers will support measures that maintain stability and control the cost of living. They will use public investment to shape markets and attract further private investment. They will deploy the power of an active state in partnership with business, and enable reforms that support higher growth and a fair deal for working people. My government believes that improved trading relations are vital for the United Kingdom's economic security, for significantly raising economic growth, and for lowering prices for working people. My ministers will introduce legislation to take advantage of new trading opportunities, including a bill to strengthen ties with the European Union. My government will also support the economic security of British businesses. Legislation will be introduced to tackle late payments and to reduce the burden of unnecessary regulation through innovation. The United Kingdom's economic security depends upon world-class infrastructure. Legislation will be introduced to unlock the benefits of airport expansion, enable roads to be built at pace, including the Lower Thames Crossing, and deliver a fair deal for the north of England through Northern Powerhouse Rail. My ministers will continue to take all action necessary to safeguard the domestic production of steel. My government will also improve the United Kingdom's security by continuing to invest in the renewal of public services. My ministers will push forward with significant reforms to the police, the National Health Service, and to the criminal justice system to help them deliver services the British people expect. Legislation will be introduced to increase confidence in the security of the immigration and asylum systems. My government will improve critical infrastructure with legislation to clean up the water industry and establish Great British Railways. My government believes that the United Kingdom should be a country fair for all and a place where every child is included in the nation's highest aspirations. My ministers believe that every child deserves the chance to succeed to the best of his or her ability and not be held back due to poverty, special educational needs, or a lack of respect for vocational education. My ministers will continue to invest in apprenticeships and measures that tackle youth unemployment. They will respond to the Milburn Review and the Timms Review and continue to reform the welfare system to support both young and disabled people to flourish in work as the basis for long-term economic security. A bill will be brought forward to raise standards in schools and introduce generational reforms of the special educational needs system. My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernise how citizens interact with public services. Alongside strong public services and a strong economy, the highest standards of trust in public office are essential for the social contract and the United Kingdom's collective security. My government will introduce the Hillsborough Law to bring forward a duty of candour for public servants. My ministers will also introduce legislation to enable peerages to be removed. My government will bring forward proposals that strengthen the delivery, accountability, innovation and productivity of the civil service. These proposals will also seek to safeguard its impartiality and core values to enhance trust and confidence in the institutions of government. My government will bring forward a bill to speed up remediation for people living in homes with unsafe cladding and a draft bill to ban abusive conversion practices. In this volatile world, my government will continue to pursue foreign policy based on a calm assessment of a national interest. It will continue its unflinching support for the brave people of Ukraine who fights on the front line of freedom. My ministers will seek to improve relations with European partners as a vital step in strengthening European security. It will continue to promote long-term peace in the Middle East and the two-state solution in Israel and Palestine. My government will also uphold the United Kingdom's unbreakable commitment to NATO and our NATO allies, including through a sustained increase in defence spending. My government will seek to reinforce the long-term energy, defence and economic security of the United Kingdom as an essential component of strength on the world stage. This will include housing, which can be a source of insecurity for many people. My ministers will bring forward legislation to increase long-term investment in social housing and to reform the leasehold system, including the capping of ground rents. My government will introduce legislation to tackle the growing threat from foreign state entities and their proxies. They will respond to the horrific attack in Southport with measures to protect the British people from extreme violence and honour the victims, the injured and their families. My ministers will also introduce legislation to improve the country's defences against cybersecurity threats. My government will support our gallant armed forces and their families who make considerable personal sacrifices for the collective security and freedom of everyone in the United Kingdom. My ministers will recognise this service with an armed forces bill that improves the service justice system and establishes the Armed Forces Covenant in statute. My ministers believe that energy independence must be a long-term goal of national security and that the nation's energy security requires long-term investment and reform, as demonstrated by recent events in the Middle East. Increased production of clean British energy will help to ensure that enemies of the United Kingdom cannot attack the economic security of the British people. My ministers will therefore introduce an energy independence bill to scale up homegrown renewable energy and protect living standards for the long term. My ministers will also take forward recommendations of the nuclear regulatory review and encourage a new era of British nuclear energy generation. My government will remain a leading advocate for tackling climate change and achieving a world free from poverty. The United Kingdom will also take action to reduce humanitarian need and conflict around the world. My ministers will champion the rights of women and girls to live in a world free from violence. This will include promoting women's full economic and political participation within their societies, with agency over the decisions that impact their lives. Next year, the United Kingdom will take on the G20 presidency and host the G20 summit to drive global growth and reinforce global stability, which is essential for the prosperity of working people across the country. My government is committed to the strength and integrity of the Union of the United Kingdom and will continue to work closely with the devolved governments to deliver for citizens across the whole of the nation. Members of the House of Commons, estimates for the public services will be laid before you. My Lords and members of the House of Commons, other measures will be laid before you. I pray that the blessing of Almighty God may rest upon your councils.
I need to speak now, otherwise the emergency tape will kick in, but there is now a sort of pause while the King's Standard, I don't know if that's what it's called, but I think that David Lammy comes and takes the speech back on one knee, which I feel is a bit of an anachronism now, don't you? It just looks a little odd. But the King's speech is now over. Natasha and I will pick over what was and was not in it shortly. But if you're just joining us, the big political story of the moment is not the legislative programme just set out by King Charles on behalf of his government. It is the breaking news that Wes Streeting, the Secretary of State for Health, is poised to resign as a precursor to mounting a leadership challenge to the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. The King and the Queen now making their way from the House of Lords chamber. They will, of course, process back through the Royal Gallery and to the robing room, where they will get ready for their departure. 11:48 is the time.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting has now left Downing Street after his meeting with the Prime Minister. It lasted around 20 minutes, Mr. Streeting refusing to speak with broadcasters when he left number 10. That, to me, sounds like the first meeting you have with your respective solicitors when you're having a divorce. And you pitch up with yours, she or he pitches up with theirs. It's a pretty grumpy meeting. No one really drinks the coffee or has the Fox's Glacier Mince. Both sides walk off and you know you're in for months, years of hell. That's what it seems to me.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, more people are switching to cartridgepeople.com. Like Max, whose kids have discovered printable colouring sheets. And now, there's no going back. And Jen, a business owner who wants printer cartridges so economical, she can print herself a pay rise. For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, switch to cartridgepeople.com. T's and C's apply. See online for our price promise.
I'm in the kitchen with Charlie Bigham. So what have we got here, Charlie?
My brand new pan-fry pad thai noodles.
Noodles? But you're Mr. Fish Pie Guy.
Guilty. And while ovens rule at roasting,
the pan is king of noodling.
Whether it's pad thai, yakisoba or laksa, finding that perfect texture is a bottomless noodle rabbit hole.
But all I have to do is stir it in the pan for 6 minutes, right?
Bingo! Try the new Charlie Bigham's Asian pan-fry noodle range, handmade in my kitchen.
Pan-fried in yours.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with 3 levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 9 minutes to 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, there's a lot going on and there's nothing going on, which sounds like a strangely existential observation, doesn't it? But it is actually true. So the King's Speech is a big deal, but Natasha Clarke, there wasn't really much in it, as is expected and as is normal.
As expected and as is normal, there's usually not like a rabbit out of the hat. It is not like Budget Day where we are sort of expecting something major. A few little things to pick up on. We have had the confirmation that the government wants to bring forward a draft conversion practices bill to ban conversion therapy. They repeatedly keep saying they're going to do this. I think Theresa May's government said they were going to do that and it's not been brought forward. Also a tourist tax, the government confirming that will be brought in line with other European nations. When you go on holiday, you usually pay a tourist tax, don't you, when you go to stay at a hotel. That's something that many mayors, including Manchester Mayor, I think Andy Burnham has been making the case for this. So essentially bringing us in line with other European nations. So when you go on holiday, you'll be having to pay an extra tourist tax, which will be go to the city. But yes, generally, there's most of the stuff that we knew was going to be in the King's speech. It is in it. We've got late payments bill. We've got more on Northern Powerhouse, steel industry, clean water bill, competition reform, more regulating for growth. Lots of these things that the government have talked about repeatedly, none of which is hugely new. I thought was interesting, actually, James, the European bill, the European Partnership bill is an interesting one. I didn't think until a couple of weeks ago someone told me this was going to be in it. We've got not much information about what's going to be. It's got a very, very short few pages on this. But one of the lines that I did think was interesting and sort of just worth reflecting on as we're talking about whether Keir Starmer is doing enough to get close to Europe. This bill is going to give powers to the government to fulfil treaty obligations in the agreements with the EU, where it, quotes, serves the national interest. That's an interesting one. And a power to extend the application of the bill to new treaties with the EU in future. Imagine the sort of Tory MPs aren't going to like that too much.
Well, that might be substantive. I may have misspoken slightly, but as you say, it will depend on what that means, won't it, and what is feasible, plausible and deliverable. With the majority, whoever the Prime Minister is, the size of the current majority, they can more or less do whatever they want.
In theory, yes. In theory, you think so. But that seems to me to be quite a big step forward, saying that we could align with other EU treaties if the government believes that that's power. You know, it's sort of as close to the EU as you can get without going back in. And that seems to be what Keir Starmer's government are trying to attempt. So I wonder if that will get some discussion and some MPs either riled up or in total support of that, saying this is exactly what we need to try and sort of separate us from the Greens and separate us from the Liberal Democrats. Who were really squeezing Labour's vote, as we saw last week in those local elections.
It's debated now, isn't it, the King's speech? They go back to the House of Commons and debate it, which is a slightly odd prospect. But again, that's what happens every year.
It is what happens every year. And yeah, exactly. It just feels like such an odd moment to be like, having MPs in the House of Commons talk about sort of governing an agenda and sort of, you know, we're getting on. And we've, as part of the sort of documents that the government have released in the last sort of few minutes since the King has made that speech. And we've got an introduction to the King's speech from the Prime Minister. And he's sort of making the case, you know, he said our country stands at a pivotal moment. The world today is more volatile and dangerous than any point in our lifetimes. You know, this would have been written in light of the losing those local elections, it's fair to say. He says, this time will be different. This King's speech shows us it will be different, with a plan to make this country stronger and fairer. So it's interesting to see it sort of, you know, his framing in light of these election losses. But lots of MPs, like I say, that I've spoken to over the last week, James, especially in light of that speech he gave on Monday, just saying, we still want you to go further. We want you to be bigger and bolder. And they feel that that's not happening.
Indeedy doody. 5 minutes. I've got to stop saying that. I only started yesterday. I've said it about 11 times in the last 24 hours. 12 noon, just around the corner for people just joining us. We don't really know what to do with this news because Keir Starmer, or rather Wes Streeting, who had a meeting with Keir Starmer amid the drama earlier this morning.
That's lovely. That's
thank
really
you.
Nice.
I might be, well, if I was still on X, I'd probably be tweeting.
What's the verb to blue sky?
I don't know. Skeet, I think. Skeeting. Oh, skeeting about Streeting having a meeting with Starmer amid the drama.
Beautiful.
Thank you very much. But nothing's going to happen now. So one of, for people just joining us, one of Wes Streeting's allies appears to have told journalists from the Times newspaper that he is going to resign and trigger a leadership contest tomorrow, or as soon as tomorrow, which is probably true. You know, there is room for him, of course, to change his mind, to withdraw. It's unlikely he's going to be over the moon with whoever has broken cover on this, particularly as the King was assuming the position in the House of Lords. But what I mean, no one can respond to it until Streeting's actually made his move. And I mean, we can talk about it, and we will in the next hour, but Starmer can't do anything about this until it actually happens. And Streeting, there's a great photograph that Kat Nealon of The Observer has picked up on, a still from events in the House earlier, where Streeting is looking ahead in a very unamused fashion, while James cleverly appears to be sort of teasing him and cajoling him. Kat Nealon of The Observer suggests that James Cleverly, who of course would be leader of the opposition if his own leadership bid hadn't been beset by complacency and a degree of numerical incompetence, James Cleverly is saying to Wes Streeting. Have you thought about lending some of your votes to Ange? Heidi Alexander behind Wes Streeting doing a very bad job of trying not to giggle while James Cleverly, everyone around them is giggling except Wes Streeting, while James Cleverly clearly engages in some inter-party badinage. But nothing's going to happen now for 24 hours, is it? It can't. I mean, Streeting won't choose today to confirm or deny. Well, he might deny. He could say today, I'm definitely not mounting a leadership bid, but that ain't likely. And he ain't going to confirm until he actually does it.
Yes, and we did hear from his team yesterday that they were unlikely to tell us, A, what the contents of this conversation with the Prime Minister has been, and B, whether there would be any sort of next steps for Mr. Streeting. So this MP, sounds like an MP that's spoken to the Times newspaper, has jumped the gun a bit. And if I were Wes Streeting, I'd be feeling totally furious that he's done this today, of all days, just as the King was walking into the Houses of Parliament. But yes, the fact that Wes Streeting's team have not confirmed nor denied any of this, they've not put out any statements, they've not picked up the phone, it lends me to think, firstly, it's probably true.
Yeah.
But B, that they don't want to do anything or say anything today. So are we in a bit of a holding pattern now for the next 24 hours while we wait for a new dawn, not the King's Speech Day, in order to give the government that time? And also to give Wes Streeting time, right? He needs to make sure that he's got the numbers, for goodness sake. And we know what happened with James Cleverly when he thought he did.
Well, he did. but he was so confident he had them that exactly. He told some of them that they could vote for someone else in order to try and finesse who he would be up against in the final round.
Exactly.
Lo and behold, he wasn't in the final round.
I think that's kind of probably unlikely between those two camps, but you never know. So yes, I think, you know, Wes Streeting's team will be making sure that he has got those 81 MPs in order to do so. But it is interesting, and like I said, this is not what we've been being told for weeks and months and days by Wes Streeting's team. They repeatedly keep saying to us, Wes is not going to be the one to trigger it. So there is always the chance that this is a rogue MP trying to force Wes Streeting's hand, and he's still not made up his mind, he's still not decided, because it is a very big decision to challenge the leader of the Labour Party, especially when you are seen as being so divisive, and lots of MPs will not be on your side if you do so.
Sky News going with allies plural, telling Sky News that he is preparing to resign. So all of those messages pinging back and forth at the moment, adding to the sense that this intervention is imminent. Things change, don't they? That meeting earlier today may well have made Streeting realised that Starmer isn't going to put a plan in place for a peaceful transition of power. He's going to fight tooth and nail to hang on to power. He's certainly going to fight tooth and nail to maintain control of the situation. And that puts Streeting in a position where he thinks, well, it's now or never. There may never be a better. That wasn't true before he went to Downing Street this morning. He may have come out of Downing Street believing that this is it now. It's now or never, because Starmer's not going anywhere. He's going to have to be pushed. He ain't going to jump. And that we wouldn't have known that for sure before he went to that meeting.
No, and we should say that, you know, the Labour Party rules mean that the incumbent is automatically on the ballot paper. Yes. So Keir Starmer's name will be automatically there. So, you know, we say Keir Starmer's going to fight. He has said yesterday to his cabinet that he's getting on with the job of governing, and the leadership challenge hasn't been met. We know, we've heard repeatedly from his allies, from people in Downing Street, saying repeatedly that the Prime Minister will fight any challenge. And like I say, he won't have to fight. His name will automatically be there. The idea will be, do you want Wes Streeting, or do you want the current incumbent to stay? Which is a high bar to meet, isn't it?
Streeting would need 20% of the parliamentary Labour Party to nominate him.
Yeah, that's the 81 MPs that we've been talking
about.
To stand for leader. And as we know there are 81, more than 81 MPs that do want the Prime Minister to go, but I'm absolutely convinced that not all of them will be backing Wes Streeting, and many of them, some of them want Andy Burnham, of course they do, and some of them just want the Prime Minister to go, and they have not decided who they want next, which many people think is totally mad, to be calling for the Prime Minister to go without a replacement.
This is June, July, August, September. It's probably 4 months for this situation to unfold if it does go ahead. Three to four months.
Yeah, I haven't read the specifics of the Labour Party rules which indicate what a timetable would look like, but I think it depends on the Labour Party chair, who is Anna Turley. She sets out that leadership timetable and what that looks like. And, you know, it depends on what they want to do. We have seen the Tories, for example, have very short leadership contests where the chairman of the Tory party has decided, we don't want this to drag out for 2 or 3 months. We want to go quickly. You know,
there's different rules in place. Every Labour MP has a period in which to secure nominations from 20% of the PLP. You only get on the ballot if you get 20%. People may remember the remarkable circumstances in which Jeremy Corbyn secured that 20% and the motivations of the people that helped him. Another reminder of how unpredictable unpredictable all of this can be when push actually begins to come to shove. And then the party units would have the chance to make supporting nominations, followed by hustings, and then the vote. It is someone heavily involved in the Labour Party for a number of years has messaged me to say it is a proper pain, and it has deliberately so in order to mitigate challenges.
Mm.
So it is deliberately a painful and painstaking process in order to ensure that nobody does it frivolously.
Exactly. And we also should note that it's not just the MPs that have a say here. It's the Labour MPs. It's the unions and affiliates, who, of which we have heard from this morning, saying they do believe that we should change the Prime Minister and the Labour leader. And then it's the constituency Labour parties as well, and then the members. So there's a lot of people to consult. This doesn't just take a week or two, it can take months. So it's the question is whether Labour MPs want to drag this out over many months and have a very painful, protracted contest, of which it looks like it's going to be incredibly dirty, especially if Wes Streeting is the one pulling that trigger.
And it makes the warning in one newspaper this morning from Andy Burnham that he will not welcome a coronation of Wes Streeting. That's a good headline there. Did you spot it, Keith? A coronation Streeting.
Nice.
Wah, 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 wah. And we're back to the strumpet.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Wes Streeting has reportedly told allies he's preparing to resign as Health Secretary tomorrow, triggering a Labour leadership contest. Mr Streeting met with Keir Starmer earlier as the Prime Minister continues to resist calls to resign. 87 Labour MPs have urged Keir to step down, while 11 trade unions affiliated with the party say that it's clear that it can't continue in its current form. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
We haven't had a readout from number 10. We don't know from Wes Streeting's side either what was said between the pair. But what we do know is what he was preparing to say ahead of time. We know they were planning to have a leadership conversation. We know that Wes Streeting had tried to do that after Cabinet and was told, sorry, guys, come back later. And it's clear that he hasn't been happy, at least according to these reports, because of what he has heard. That he was in number 10 for just 16 minutes this morning. So incredibly rapid meeting.
Despite the uncertainty surrounding Keir's position, the Prime Minister has been in Parliament for the King's speech. Speaking in the House of Lords in the last half hour, King Charles set out the government's legislative agenda for the next parliamentary session.
My government will take urgent action to tackle anti-Semitism and ensure all communities feel safe. My government believes that the United Kingdom's economic security depends on raising living standards in every part of the United Kingdom. My ministers will support measures that maintain stability and control the cost of living.
The King's speech included more than 35 bills and draft bills, including on immigration, the NHS and police reforms. It also included a framework to potentially nationalise British Steel. MPs are set to debate the speech in Parliament this afternoon. Stay with LBC for the very latest. One other story this lunchtime, an online suicide forum highlighted in an investigation by LBC has been fined £950,000 for breaching the Online Safety Act. Our investigation last year found that the site had been linked to more than 130 deaths. The regulator Ofcom's now given the forum's provider 10 days to make safeguarding changes. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 16 at 10,281. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for much of the UK. Windy in the southwest, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom, the LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Diary, what time's my Specsavers eye test?
Hi, Miriam. It's in 15 minutes. Would you like directions?
Uh-huh.
Great. Exit the bedroom, pass the dog's basket, sit at the kitchen table. You have arrived.
Mm.
Enough time to move pickles. Visitors do make him frisky.
Some people can't get to Specsavers unaccompanied. That's why we offer home visits. Home visits from
Miriam's Journey.
Savers.
Down pickles.
Geographical restrictions apply. Find out if you're eligible online.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
7 minutes after 12 is the time. There is some extraordinary cognitive dissonance, isn't there, in the King talking about housing crises and poverty in 2026 in the United Kingdom. And I don't want you to think I'm unaware of it. And all that I'm unanimated by it. It's something a little bit unseemly almost about it. The idea that someone can be delivering a speech addressing poverty and housing crises when they own countless properties. One of the biggest landlords in the country, isn't he? But I mean, the properties that are for his own use are innumerable as well. And poverty, while he's wearing jewellery that you could probably house 100 homeless people simply by flogging down the pawnbrokers today. I just mentioning it. I'm not unaware of it, but I'm going to take issue with Susan from Scotland. I'm not putting you in idiot's corner, Susan, yet. It's obscene, James, obscene. Let's have some of them jewels and spend it on social care. Why are you so in awe of ridiculous nonsense? Waving a wee union flag, are you? I'll bet Lewis Goodall isn't. Well, if you felt that coverage that I just provided of the King's speech was awed, reverent, respectful, and, well, insert words of your own choice there, then I'm afraid you're absolutely bonkers. I don't even know what I could have done to demonstrate how unseriously I take an awful lot of that business. But hey-ho, and be careful. Don't start, you know, trying to build up some sort of rivalry between me and Lewis Goodall. That way madness lies. Susan from Scotland. But Michael's been in touch to prove a point I made when I suggested to you that the correct name for that long, thin horn was strumpet, which obviously wasn't true, but I pretended to think it was true in order to get messages like this from Michael, who writes, I don't think the instrument is called a strumpet, James. A strumpet is something else entirely. Thank you, Michael. And then I'm going to read you a message. I've had some lovely messages today. I don't read out the lovely ones. I don't know why. I probably should read them out a little bit more, but it always seems a little bit self-aggrandizing. But there have been some really lovely ones today. Thank you for enjoying. I got some rude ones as well, of course, but the general sense was that you enjoyed my attempts to bring some levity to the business end of the King's speech. So thank you for those. But sometimes you just get me. You really do. Please don't read my name out, says this texter, but I'm just about to go to my mum's funeral. And James's reference to the prodigy and his commentary on the King's speech has just made me chuckle on a day when I didn't think I would. And those, I'm going to delete that quickly so that I don't accidentally say your name, but my commiserations, my condolences if you're still listening, and I hope today goes off as well as it possibly can. If it's any consolation at all, the knowledge that your mum knew how much you loved her will be a great comfort to you one day. Maybe not today, okay? Probably, definitely not today. Today's too raw and too difficult, but as the days turn into weeks and the weeks turn into months and you look back upon a lifetime and a relationship, then the knowledge that she knew how much she meant to you will be a great, great comfort to you. But those are the moments. I don't know what the radio equivalent of a fourth wall is. Do you? You know, when you're in the theatre and you break the fourth wall, or you're on television and you do one of those little asides like Sarah Jessica Parker in Sex and the City. But when I get a message like that, it reminds me, it just reminds me, because I'm always conscious of it, that we are essentially just people who hang out together every day. And I try to look out for you. And when I get messages like that, it reminds me that sometimes we just manage to get it right. So seriously, God bless and good luck today. And thank you for that lovely message. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Back to business. Let's act as if Wes Streeting is going to announce his leadership bid tomorrow. I'd say it was 85% certain. Natasha's now getting messages from allies of Wes Streeting confirming that they also think that it is about to happen. The brevity of that meeting at Downing Street today suggests to me that Streeting arrived with hopes that were quickly dashed. And those hopes would have involved the roadmap for departure that many people were calling upon Keir Starmer to construct. So not an immediate resignation, but an announcement of what was going to happen. An acceptance that the game was up. That's what Wes Streeting wanted. when he realised that he was not going to get it, that for Keir Starmer, the game is not up. That's when he decided he had little choice but to press the big red button. Marked leadership challenge. So he'll resign as Secretary of State for Health. It's not beyond possibility that Keir Starmer sacks him in the course of this afternoon, if Keir Starmer is absolutely certain that this is what West Streeting is planning to do. A bit like what Kemi Badenoch did when honest Bob Jenrick decided to spend the rest of his career pretending that he'd never been in the Tory party, let alone immigration minister, while moaning for the rest of his career about what a mess the Tories made of everything, especially immigration. Kemi Badenoch got wind of that plan from honest Bob, so she handed him his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap. It's amazing how many complaints I get about that figure of speech. It's one of my all-time favourites, but I'll try and moderate my use of it. So she kicked him into touch. She pushed him before he could jump, effectively. I suppose Starmer could do that. I can't think of a precedent for that happening, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility. But we're going to conduct our conversation now as if it is a fait accompli. So West Streeting is mounting a leadership challenge against Keir Starmer. It's 13 minutes after 12. I don't have a great deal to say about this, as you would expect, because it has only just happened. I am very keen to hear your absolute gut reaction, your knee-jerk reaction. Normally I'm a bit allergic to knee-jerk reactions, because I'm much more interested in the why than the what. But sometimes the what works, and the what works at moments like this. Wes Streeting, mounting a leadership challenge to Keir Starmer less than 2 years after Starmer won a landslide general election victory. Albeit a shallow and largely loveless landslide, a landslide numerically it was. What do you think? I mean, particularly interested if you are surprised by your initial reaction. But give me a ring now and tell me what your reaction is to the news that Wes Streeting has broken cover and is bidding to oust Keir Starmer as leader of the Labour Party and, of course, Prime Minister. My first thought, and I reserve the right to completely change my mind about this in the course of the next 45 minutes, my first thought is that this is quite weaselly behaviour, quite self-serving behaviour. It is the opposite of loyalty. It is the opposite of unity. It is the opposite of stability. But it may well be that it is the best chance that the Labour Party has of going into the next general election with a leader capable of winning it. I honestly don't know. But on a personal level, before we get into the politics of it, I'm not immediately sure Wes Streeting is going to emerge from this very well. They often say that he who wears the dagger never wears the crown. It's not entirely true, but it's quite true. Anybody who thinks of John Major's toothache at this moment, or his dentist, is probably as big a political anorak as I have become over the last few years. But there's something about being the one to stab your own leader in the front or the back, the et tu, Brute moment, that I think can tarnish somebody for a very, very long time. And right now, Wes Streeting is in that space for me. I'm a little bit kind of, oh, come on. Really? You're going to hand this kind of gift to your own enemies? Bunch of bozos voting reform because they thought that it would have an impact on national politics and you would somehow get Starmer out as a consequence of voting for the various racists and weirdos that now populate the council chambers of the United Kingdom under Nigel Farage's Christopher Harborne-sponsored flag. You kind of give them a win as well, don't you, in a way? I don't know. I'm going to find out what you think. Get the numbers now. You really will. Well, yeah, you will get through, but be quick, all right? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. The time now is 12:16.
This is LBC.
With problem earwax, things don't feel quite right. The NHS recommends using olive oil to help relieve build-up. So Otex offers medical-grade olive oil in both drops and spray. But if you need to act faster, there's Otex Express. However you choose to treat it, choose the earwax treatment brand most recommended by pharmacists. And be clear to hear with Otex. Based on a survey of 200 pharmacies. For verification, visit otexhere.com.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
18 minutes after 12. I mean, if you look back at Dennis Skinner's contributions during the Queen's speech, they are nowhere near as iconic or as funny as they seem to be at the time. They're rude and they're quite, they're all on YouTube. Sometimes Skinner was a very, very funny man. But quite often he just, in retrospect, comes across as a little bit sort of obnoxious. However, it is believed to be a Labour MP called Torquil Crichton, which does not immediately strike you as a name likely to be associated with a Labour MP, but we live in strange times. Torquil Crichton would have been a sort of 19th century Conservative MP. Torquil Crichton! He is believed to be responsible for a moment of genuine comedy. And just in case you get confused, it's Andy Burnham that you need to have in your mind at this moment. But this is what happened just a few moments ago when Blackrod arrived at the door of the House of Commons.
Not her, Andy.
Blackrod.
Why didn't he get around? Why didn't he get a laughter or a round of applause? The idea that it was Andy Burnham, I think, because it's not immediately obvious. It's extremely funny, though. A moment of levity during a very serious. That's not that serious, but there we are. Referencing the fact, of course, that the leadership challenge, actual or imagined, is in the forefront of everybody's minds. And it is Wes Streeting who appears to be the one to pull the proverbial trigger. And I want to know what you think about that. Angela's in Barnet to start the process. Angela, what would you like to say?
Well, James, I'm shocked and I'm disgusted.
Oh.
And as I'm a member of the Labour Party, and if Wes Streeting ends up standing for the leadership, I'm not voting for him.
Why not?
Because I think the way he's behaved is appalling. I think the way they've all behaved is appalling. What's the matter with them? They're no better than the Tories now. We've waited, James, 14 years for them to get into power. As Labour supporters and voters, I've waited 14 years, and now look how they're behaving. It almost makes me want to cry.
I can hear the emotion in your voice. Is there nothing in the results of last week's elections that sort of moderates your disgust? You sort of say, oh, well, I'm very sad that this is happening, but it's probably for the best.
No, I don't think it is for the best. You know, what the alternative is no better. Who's going to stand? Andy Burnham's not an MP.
No, but he could be. He could. I mean, there's a 3 to 4 month process going forward now, so it's tricky. Yeah. And Streeting may be calculating that as well, of course, which I don't think is going to give him any leeway in your reckoning. He may well be calculating that if he moves now, then he won't have to face Burnham, but if he waits for the next opportunity, Burnham could be in place.
But where Streeting has got a majority of 700... What are the chances are he's going to get voted out at the next election, and then we have another leadership thing if he wins.
Good Lord. So, it's all going on, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just crazy. What's the matter with them? Why don't they need to grow up?
Well, if I push you briefly away from the them to the him, does your opinion of Wes Streeting change at all in this moment, or is it merely...
Yes, and I used to really like him,
that's
James.
That's interesting.
I mean, I think a lot of Labour supporters really liked him. You know, he was straight-talking, he'd answer a question, and now he's this weaselly little person whispering in dark corners, just plotting, and it's horrible. And I'm shocked. I'm really shocked.
I suppose from your point of view, then let's hope it's not true, although all of the indications are that it almost certainly, or that it probably is. Thank you, Angela. 22 minutes. I almost feel I should be offering you condolences, but we are operating on the presumption that these reports will be proved accurate. We don't know for certain yet that Wes Streeting is going to resign tomorrow to launch a leadership bid against Keir Starmer. But let's say that he is. How do you respond to that news? 22 minutes after 12 is the time. I should probably mention that if you want to listen to quite in-depth, long, very personal and human interviews with Wes Streeting, Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham, Keir Starmer and David Lammy, who no one ever mentions in this kind of context, but you never know. Why is no one... I mean, I don't know whether Sadiq Khan's got any interest in the big job, but it's odd that they're talking about one mayor whose record is nowhere near as impressive as another mayor. As potential prime ministers. But anyway, the four obvious contenders in a coming leadership battle, should Keir Starmer decide to fight it, are Wes Streeting, Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham and Keir Starmer, all of whom have appeared on Full Disclosure, one of whom in front of an audience, which obviously creates a slightly different energy. But we should probably put that together as a package for people, if they all do end up on a ballot, to familiarise themselves a little bit more with what they're like, not away from the microphones, obviously, or the cameras, but in a slightly more human and intimate environment. Angela, thank you. David is in Bayswater. David, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Hello. Yeah, so basically, I think we need to make a distinction between people like Wes and the ordinary MPs, because Wes has not stood up against any of the policies that Keir Starmer has tried to get through Parliament and failed. And so clearly, he didn't object to these, or he didn't publicly say
he did.
Well,
he's a cabinet member, mate. He's not allowed to.
No, but can I just finish my point, James?
You can't. Don't be so rude. He's a cabinet member. He can't...
Right, okay.
A cabinet member can't object to what the government is doing without leaving the cabinet. It's called collective It's called collective cabinet responsibility,
yes,
and it's been part of our unwritten constitution for over 100 years.
But James, my point is, it goes to show he's putting his own self-interest.
No, it doesn't.
What he's good. Well, in my opinion, can I just finish my point?
No. John's in Telford. John, what would you like to say?
I've got to follow that. Hi.
Can I just finish my ludicrous point that bears no resemblance to reality whatsoever? Because I'm me and it matters. So carry on, John.
I will have my say.
You will.
Hi, sorry. James, first time caller, a long time listener.
Welcome.
But it's only you, right?
It is, correct.
I think this is actually great news for Starmer. Opportunity knocks now. Mm. You can have the cabinet reshuffle. He could drop Angela into health if he wanted to. Kill two birds with one stone. If Streeting doesn't get the 81 points, then that's...
It's a big if.
That problem.
It's a big if.
It is a big if.
Susan in Scotland's favourite LBC... Susan in Scotland's favourite LBC presenter, Lewis Goodall, has just posted that. If Wes Streeting challenges and has the number, and that's a big if, he says, then the next big decision will be with Ed Miliband.
Or cabinet reshuffle has to be done because... Wes is out, therefore he can seem to be doing something that might kind of feed the media beast and calm things down.
And your personal opinion of, reaction to Wes Streeting, is it changing in the moment? My inbox is not very pleasant reading for the Health Secretary, but I'm interested in what you think.
It's not doing him any favours, is it? His timing's off. It's not doing any favours at all. He was widely seen as the coming man, but today is not that day, so I think actually he's doing himself more harm than he is to Starm.
Yes, it could well be. Unless, of course, it all comes off perfectly and he's Prime Minister this time next September.
In which case, you'll forget this conversation and I'll be away.
Yeah, same here. So luckily, none of it's recorded. 26 minutes after 12 is the time. Streeting moves first. What do we think of that? Charlie's in Hitchin. Charlie, what would you like to say?
I just think it's probably the first domino in many dominoes to fall for the Labour Party in the next general election.
So why do you say that?
Well, I just think we're going kind of down the same route that the Tories went. It's where it's leader after leader.
Oh, they can't.
All vying for power. And I think really the next Prime Minister should be the person that doesn't want to be Prime Minister. I think that's probably...
I think politics should be full of people who don't want to be in politics. It's one of my pet theories as well, actually, like the old Groucho Marx line about clubs. I was about to scoff then. not quite as violently as I scoffed with the caller before last, but I was about to scoff and say, oh, don't be ridiculous. Of course we're not going to go down a Tory route of having leader after leader after leader. But 2 years ago, Charlie, if you'd said to me, I don't think Labour are going to be any different from the Tories, they'll probably be talking about changing the leadership in 2 years' time, I'd have scoffed. I'd have gone, oh, don't be daft. Of course they're not. This is a complete diff. So you can't really say anything with confidence anymore.
Well, I think that's probably my problem, and why I feel a bit disenfranchised with our democracy right now is, you know, none of these leaders come in and actually stick to what they're trying to do. I feel like the parties are so fragmented, you know, the Labour Party, you've got the Labour left, you've got the Labour centre and the Labour, you know, right, and nothing can get done. And meanwhile, we're all the sorry people trying to get by, and none of these policies are happening.
That's a brilliant point. Because, of course, Starmer's failures are partly as a consequence of the left of his own party. People to the left of him, which is probably most of the parliamentary Labour Party, and Wes Streeting is perceived as being, if anything, to the right of Starmer. So the idea that he's the natural heir apparent is pie in the sky. And of course, it also adds to that thing you've just touched on, which isn't pretty, is it? That this just speaks to the picture of chaos. It speaks to the catalogue, the continuing catalogue of chaos that typifies British politics and has done now for the best part of a decade. And that's where we started the show at 10 o'clock this morning. Keir Starmer and Labour were supposed to be bringing an end to that particularly chaotic chapter. Charlie, great stuff. Thank you. Zoe's in Stonehouse. Zoe, your gut reaction to this, and we're calling it news for the time being.
It's very strong. I'm very nervous at the moment, mind you. But
it's only
I'm
me.
Very angry.
It's only me, Zoe. It's only me. I'm a pussycat. I never rude to anybody. I never cut callers off with little reason or justification. You're absolutely safe here, Zoe.
No, and don't butt in or anything.
None of that.
It's just my gut reaction.
Yes.
I'm extremely angry. I've spent all week trying to get in touch with my local MP here, Simon Ofer, who obviously is backing ousting Starmer.
Okay.
I don't think it is going to do us a great deal of good because, I mean, I know you don't go on Threads, but I'm on Threads now.
Okay.
And the amazing support on there for the Prime Minister is incredible.
Well, Blue Sky is similar, but it doesn't translate into any opinion polls.
No.
It's not. I mean, it's even more. I mean, it's anecdotal, isn't it? And a plural of anecdote is not data.
It is. However, I just, I wouldn't vote for Wes Streeting. He has gone down, in my opinion. It's all just more drama, as you say, for Starmer. And we're not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere forward.
But if this is the best chance.
Yes.
To go into the next general election with someone capable of winning it. That involves accepting that Keir Starmer isn't, which I don't think you have done. You haven't accepted that Keir Starmer isn't capable of winning the next general election. For the record, nor have I. But that is Streeting's only defence, really, isn't it?
That's why he's doing it.
Yes, exactly that. I can do better than Keir Starmer will.
No, well, then I think that he'd better be careful what he wishes for, because he'll just be skewered, as they all, anyone who takes over will be, because that's just how it goes for Labour.
There is one element that we've all overlooked, or at least I have overlooked, and it's been picked up. You mentioned Threads. The platform of choice for me is Blue Sky these days. Where one of my all-time favourite contributors is a chap called Roland Smith, who is probably a more assiduous watcher of unhinged headlines even than I am. And he points out, Streeting will know the adage that he who wields the knife fails to wear the crown, but I suspect he knows he can't win, which is why he's wielding the knife. I hadn't thought of that. I'd pointed it out that his path to power looks almost insuperable. Because he is so unpopular on the left of the party. But that, of course, is not going to be something that Wes Streeting is unaware of. So, arguably, we now do a 180-degree turn from thinking that Wes Streeting is acting out of unalloyed and undiluted self-interest to wondering whether he is, in fact, acting in what he sees as the best interests of the party, even if it involves him being tarnished by the act of betrayal and not having any real prospect of coming away with the cup. That's fascinating. That's really interesting. And it's a gut reaction, which is what I'm canvassing from you as well at the moment on 0345 6060973. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Wes Streeting has reportedly told his allies he plans to resign as Health Secretary tomorrow, triggering a Labour leadership contest. He met with the Prime Minister earlier as Sir Keir Starmer continues to refuse to resign. 87 Labour MPs have now urged him to stand down, while 11 trade unions linked to the party also say it's clear this can't go on. Amidst the chaos and political uncertainty, the King has delivered his speech at the state opening of Parliament. It included more than 35 bills and draft bills will be debated by MPs this afternoon. And the bodies of three women have been recovered from the sea off Brighton. Emergency services were called after concerns were raised for the women's welfare just before 6 a.m. this morning. LBC weather, mixed afternoon ahead with showers across much of the UK. Some of these will be heavy with a chance of thunder, a high of 14 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Fever Tree Mexican Lime Soda. You're not like other mixers. Your zesty bite, twist of yuzu. Sure, you're perfect with vodka. But even on your own, you make the most exquisite soft drink. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, more people are switching to cartridgepeople.com. Like Max, whose kids have discovered printable colouring sheets. And now, there's no going back. And Jen, a business owner who wants printer cartridges so economical, she can print herself a pay rise. For unbeatable prices on printer ink and toner, switch to cartridgepeople.com. T's and C's apply. See online for our price promise.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:34 is the time. I'd tell you something. If you think I'm bad at this job, you should have known me when I was a showbiz editor, which is admittedly now a very, very long time ago. But there is a story in the news today that has brought back to me with blood-chilling accuracy what an appalling showbiz journalist I was. I was good at interviews. I'm not being conceited. I was good at interviews, and I was good at writing. But I had absolutely no nose for a story, which is a bit of a problem on the showbiz beat. The worst example ever was probably when I was backstage at a music show, a TV show, not Top of the Pops, but it was like, I'm very old, you know, so it was like an attempt to be like Top of the Pops. Is Top of the Pops even still going? Might have been the Pepsi chart show. And I saw Chris Evans coming out of Jerry Halliwell's dressing room. And I just thought to myself, oh, that's nice. I didn't know they were friends. And then, of course, I got to work the next morning and every other newspaper, all of whom had been in attendance, are running a story about a romance between Chris Evans and Jerry Halliwell. So I had absolutely no excuse. I'd literally been there. I think I even saw it before other people did. And I just managed to completely miss the boat. There's a story in the news today. It's Wednesday today. Spoiler alert. There's a story in the news today that I have been aware of since Saturday. And it didn't actually cross my mind to mention it. I don't know if it would have merited much coverage on LBC, to be honest with you, because it's very much a showbiz story. But I could easily have given a nod to a pal who's still on that pitiless beat. But I didn't, because I am absolutely appalling at knowing what a story is and what a story isn't. Special prize today, a handshake and a pat on the head for anyone who can guess what story it is. In today's news, the showbiz story in today's news that I've known about for over half a week. Okay? And it comes with a punchline, this, so let's hope that I remember to tell you. 12:37 is the time. Wes Streeting. Cometh the hour, cometh the man, perhaps. Anthony's in Dartford. Anthony, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yes. We're living in an age of ping-pong politics. It's almost like a football management term, isn't it? You know, if you don't have two good games,
you're out.
You're literally out. The thing is, I feel a little bit torn all over the place, really, because Keir Starmer, yes, I know he's dull as dishwater, but he has scored some goals. He just hasn't had the celebrations. You know, he hasn't made the noise.
Yes, I like that.
But I don't think his and Angela Rayner's approach to politics has been extremely dynamic in any way whatsoever. I mean, when we go back to, you know, old Two Jags and Tony Blair, you know, they kind of appealed to both sides of the public, didn't they? You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And we just don't have that anymore. People want to be excited by politics. They're not. Not with Starmer stuff.
It's weird, though, because he defended Ukraine. He's coped with Donald Trump's destruction of the Atlantic Alliance, which is an extremely big deal. Historians will be making a much bigger meal out of that than we have recently. And there's a good piece in The Spectator, actually, that's just dropped by Nick Cohen. He points out he somehow ended up more unpopular than Liz Truss, despite never causing an economic crisis, and more unpopular than Nigel Farage, even though the worst allegation against him was that he took free suits from a friend rather than £5 million in secret from a crypto billionaire. It is bonkers, but it's also true. That's the problem, isn't it? That's what you're talking about.
But, I mean, when we're talking about Wes Streeting and stuff like, you know, and him coming in, it's no surprise. There's no surprise that there is a challenge coming, you know, when Starmer seems to be at his weakest, at his most vulnerable. I mean, I don't like the way that Starmer treated Corbyn, ousting him from the Labour Party after, you know, Jeremy Corbyn got the most amount of memberships for the Labour Party.
Well, that was a very specific thing that he was suspended from the Labour Party. It's not linked to his popularity or unpopularity as Labour leader.
But then when we say about his, he doesn't like to be challenged. I think he likes to be the top dog, you know. I think he's very threatened by Andy Burnham. We saw it again, didn't we? A few weeks ago, you know, when Andy Burnham was on the fence whether he's going to be the mayor or stand to be an MP again. That was blocked.
Yeah, and Angela Rayner has come out and said so, of course, that she doesn't approve of that.
Yeah. So I just think that Starmer is vanilla, isn't he? He's Magnolia. He doesn't really...
He can't be vanilla, mate, because everybody hates him. Vanilla is like a byword. It's not. He's Marmite, except nobody loves him.
I know what you mean. A lot of people don't like Magnolia either. They don't choose it these days.
Magnolia.
But
what do you think? I mean, like, in a sense, because, of course, Roland Smith has thrown a bit of a cat among my pigeons by pointing out Streeting might know he can't win, but he's decided someone's got to do something and nobody else is going to. So he's like the, forgive this analogy, Anthony, because it takes us a long way from sport, unless you're very familiar with the career of Gary Lineker, where Streeting is playing the role of the laxative here in the process of flushing out Keir Starmer.
There he is. But look at him. He's a very, what's the word? Ambitious guy.
Clearly. You
know, he's extremely ambitious. He's rocketed through. He's done some good things. He's tried to, you know, pick up the NHS, digitalise it. You know, he's got rid of NHS England. He's done some good things. He has done some good things. But is he just another one who is out for himself? I don't know.
I don't think any of them are, to be honest with you. Not in this iteration of the Labour Party. I don't think any of them are out for themselves in quite such a base way as some people are. And by complete coincidence, some more breaking news for you. The Parliamentary Standards Commissioner has revealed that it will be launching an investigation into Nigel Farage's secret £5 million donation from a cryptocurrency billionaire set to make absolutely unimaginable fortunes from policies that Nigel Farage has already already announced that he would introduce if he ever became Prime Minister. The billionaire, of course, who owns 12% of the company that Nigel Farage sat in this very studio praising and promoting, without revealing to Nick, who was conducting the interview at the time, that he'd just trousered 5 million quid from the bloke who owned 12% of it. That on top of the 22 million quid that the same bloke had given to Farage's various political parties, and the 1 million quid that he gave to Boris Johnson. There is a story doing the rounds. A lot of you are cross with me for not talking about it. Listen, we are subject to law like everybody else is. So if one hideous character threatens to take legal action against another hideous character over allegations made by the second hideous character about the first hideous character, I have to wait until my lawyers tell me that I can cover that story. So don't be a fool and think that it's evidence of me not wanting to talk about something or being being frightened or cowed. At least nobody's suggested I've been silenced. That ship seems to have sailed. Anthony, great stuff. Mike's in Sutton. Mike, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Listen to you since before it was popular. This is the first time I think I've ever been...
Since before it was fashionable.
Yeah. This is the first time I felt sufficiently passionate to call you up about something, believe it or not.
Yeah, go on.
I'm human. Look, I'm full disclosure, I'm a Labour Party member. And I'm a bit of a Starmer loyalist, so that's where I come from.
Yes.
I don't think Wes Streeting quite realises within the party that most of his support are from people like me, on that side of the party, that will be absolutely fuming about this.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolute madness, and he'll have alienated a massive proportion of the people like me that thought, you know what, one day, after Starmer's gone or whatever happens, would vote for Wes next. Not a chance now. I tell you what, 5 years' time, if it's Burnham and Streeting, and I really dislike Burnham, I'd vote Burnham.
So this is... what about that suggestion that Streeting is forcing the issue without much hope of actually coming out on top?
Well, I think people suggesting that probably aren't talking about the same way Streeting the rest of us now. I think he's an incredibly ambitious person. I would be highly sceptical of anything like that being pushed. And do you know what? He wouldn't win. If Starmer stood, Starmer wins. If somebody else stands against Streeting, there's a whole host of other people that would be more popular in the Labour Party to the left. So he's opening it back up again. I cannot understand it for the life of me, James.
No, I except that he really does feel, and a lot of people around him and other contenders really do feel, that Starmer's reached the end of the road, and you categorically don't feel that. I'm afraid I'm rather pathetically oscillating between thinking that and not thinking that, for which I can only apologise, but at least I'm honest. You think Starmer deserves to be given another chance, as he pleaded for on Monday?
Yeah, I'm not immune to it all, James. I mean, you'd have to have your head in the sand, but I have an element of trust, I have an element of respect for what the fourth guy to win Labour an election, give him more than 2 years. We're becoming a country that, if we allow that to happen, whatever party it is, it becomes ungovernable.
That's my worry.
Let's give the guy a bit of a chance. You know, and if you're a year, 18 months out from election, then you can have that conversation, but it's just madness 2 years in. Absolute madness.
That's my worry. And then if whoever comes up next doesn't produce the goods in 5 minutes flat, they'll start talking about replacing him or her as well. And I'm afraid that is feasible now. And it used to be a conservative condition. And now it would appear to have been contagious, and it's infected Labour as well. It is 12:45. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I may catch up. I don't know if there is any more information to give you, but that £5 million that Nigel Farage accepted in secret from a cryptocurrency billionaire based in Thailand called Christopher Harborne, who uses a different name when conducting business in Thailand, is being investigated by the parliamentary commissioner, despite Nigel Farage insisting that they'd already investigated it themselves and he had absolutely nothing to account for. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
King's Speech done, no fireworks. Can't say the same about the Labour Party. There are reports Wes Streeting will resign and run against Keir Starmer. Is it vital Andy Burnham runs too?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Now with Little Plus, collect points that you can turn into possibilities. Pepper abilities. Ooh. Pasta abilities. Burrata abilities. Kayak abilities. So collect and spend your Little Plus points on hundreds of rewards or money off coupons. Lidl, more to value. Exclusions apply. For T's and C's, see lidl.co.uk/LPTV 18 plus GB only.
With problem earwax, things don't feel quite right. The NHS recommends using olive oil to help relieve build-up, so Otex offers medical-grade olive oil in both drops and spray. But if you need to act faster, there's Otex Express. However you choose to treat it, choose the earwax treatment brand most recommended by pharmacists. And be clear to hear with Otex. Based on a survey of 200 pharmacies. For verification, visit otexhere.com.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:48 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I said I'd tell you what the story was. Eric Clapton was on stage in Barcelona at the weekend. I think it was Barcelona. And some fool in the audience threw a record at him. A record in a record sleeve. And as a consequence of that, he called off the concert. He left the stage a little early, much to the, of course, the disappointment of the people that were in the crowd. He's 81 years old. And as he was walking off stage to prepare for his encore, the vinyl sleeve came spinning towards him, hitting him in the chest, which would be really scary, wouldn't it? If regardless of your age, if you were on a stage and someone threw something at you, it would really disturb you. My friend Mike was in the audience. Mike Sanchez himself, an absolutely brilliant musician who's on tour in the UK this summer, and he has supported Eric Clapton in the past. And he brought it to my attention on Saturday. But in my classic tradition as a first-class showbiz journalist, the worst showbiz journalist ever, I completely missed the fact that this would constitute a proper news story until yesterday when it started appearing on all the news sites and today when it's appeared in your newspapers. Eric Clapton walking out of a concert after being hit in the chest by a record. Apparently, get ready for this, Keith, you'll like this song. Apparently he was backstage and they were saying to him, and it's terrible someone's thrown a record at you, Eric, but are you going to go back on? And he said, no, I'm not. And that's vinyl. Yeah? Vinyl? Final? Rachel's in Manchester. Rachel, what would you like to say?
I'm just infuriated, if I'm being honest. It has become a circus, absolute circus. I think for people like me who's a Labour, you know, lifelong Labour voter, I'm a single mum. I earn a good salary. You know, I'm in £50,000 a year and I'm struggling. I think what the Labour Party is failing to see here, the problem isn't Keir. The problem is the party. They've got no plan. They can't move fast enough on things. They've become the party of benefits. And I could not vote for Wes Streeting. He's not someone I would think could do a better job than Keir Starmer. So what is the plan that Wes Streeting has today?
Well, I suppose we'd have to hear him out first before we could conclude.
I don't think he'd have anything to say, James. What could he possibly say?
Just to clarify, it was Madrid, not Barcelona, where Eric Clapton got hit with a record sleeve. But that's not necessarily...
That.
Yeah, well, it's obviously not at the top of your list of priorities at the moment. But
not right now. This whole thing is infuriating. I'm at a point now where... What are we going to do as a country? Because I can tell you, if Wes Streeting pulls the trigger today, the Labour Party can say goodbye to the next general election.
Why do you think that? Because Starmer is unspeakably unpopular.
But is it Starmer that's unpopular?
Yes. No, it is. And I don't get it, but it is. I mean, his personal popularity rating is off the charts bad.
Because people are not educated in politics. And what happens is, nowadays, when people don't see change fast enough, they blame the politician, the Prime Minister. All the Reform voters think that Keir Starmer's to blame for the fact that the votes keep coming in, not the Conservatives. So that's why he is unpopular. Wes Streeting will be just as unpopular. The next Labour leader will be just as unpopular. There is no end to this.
Well, we talked a lot on this programme, indeed everyone who does this for a living, has talked a lot about Starmer's personal and particular set of skills, about his clubability, his intonation, his voice, his delivery, his confidence. All of those things would be different with a change of leader. We talk a lot about charisma without being 100% sure what it means.
Well, Wes Streeting hasn't got any charisma.
No, but Angela Rayner has.
I agree. I completely agree. And, you know, I could probably put a vote behind Angela Rayner.
Yes.
Andy Burnham, not so much. I don't think he's got the charisma that she holds, but she would be very unpopular with certain parts of the party.
And they would come for her with not just the political bias, but with all of the misogyny and the rest
exactly
of it, and the
clout
and the snobbery that underpins newspapers owned by various viscounts and foreign billionaires.
Streeting is making a huge mistake, because if he thinks that people are going to get behind him, most of the country right now are pointing the finger at Keir Starmer because they don't understand that the problems that we're having are due to wars in Iran, Brexit, all of those things.
14 years of Tory rule. But isn't it on him? Final question. Shouldn't he have made that case more powerfully then, Rachel?
Yeah, and you know what? Like I said, for me, Keir can go, but it's who's going to replace him. And right now, they don't have a plan or a person who's any better. So if I was them, I'd shut up until they did. And that's all I can say, honestly.
give her a cup of tea. Oh, fantastic. Great stuff. Thank you, Rachel. No, thank you. We'll do this again, I hope. No support whatsoever for Wes Streeting at the moment. And this is, you know, I am essentially a left-leaning radio presenter, albeit that I'm the king of the centrist dads. I am surprised. There's nobody. I mean, given the amount of clamour for change, you'd think somebody would at least be saying, thanks, Wes, whether you end up winning or not, at least someone is pressing the button. At least someone is stirring the pot. But at the moment, extraordinary levels of opposition and disappointment in Wes Streeting. Natasha Clark is back in the studio. What do we know about this investigation into, what's his name again, the chap who accepted a secret £5 million from a cryptocurrency billionaire based in Thailand who uses a different name to conduct his business in Thailand, I will remember by 1 o'clock today.
That's the one. Yes, so according to reports in the BBC, they understand that the Parliamentary Standards Commissioner has decided to begin an inquiry into whether the Reform leader Nigel Farage breached House of Commons rules by accepting that £5 million gift. We know that he hasn't declared it. And whenever reporters have approached him about this, the Reform Party leader and indeed the Reform Party have repeatedly said that under their understanding of the rules, they think he doesn't need to declare it. They think it doesn't breach rules. And they think that Nigel Farage has accepted legal counsel, which has told him that he didn't need to do so. It's unclear at the moment whether this is indeed open. This investigation is indeed definitely open, because they've not given us a statement. It's just the report from the BBC's Chris Mason. Again, we talk of reputable journalism. Mm. He is, of course, a reputable journalist and reputable source. But we have not got a statement yet from the parliamentary authorities confirming this news. Now, we usually do get a statement from them saying that they have had these allegations reported to them, and indeed they will open investigation. But we have not had that news. Indeed, many MPs do think that this was inevitable, that he was going to face such a probe. But again, when I've been speaking to people within the Reform Party, they're confident that Nigel Farage has done nothing wrong.
Although I've seen various interviews in which various, because they've all given money to the party, haven't they? All the senior members. Nick Candy, the treasurer, has given a million. This Christopher Harborne character, otherwise known as Chakrit Sakunkrit, based in Thailand, he's given £22 million, I think.
To the Reform Party.
To the party.
To the party itself,
£5 million
exactly.
To Farage. Richard Tice has given millions to the party. Zia Yusuf has given a lot of money to the... They've all given... There's no one in that up, apart from poor old 30p Lee, They've all given money to the party, but this is money given to Farage personally, £5 million.
And the rules are different.
But what they're not confident of, I've heard various members of that inner circle, or sort of donor circle, being asked whether or not they're confident he hasn't taken money from anybody else. And none of them can say that they are confident that he hasn't taken money from anybody else, because if he has, he hasn't shared it with them. Just yes, like presumably that's he didn't true. Share this one either.
Yes, and again, it's not clear how this information got into the public domain, because of course it was before Nigel Farage was an MP, and there are different rules which, you know, you don't have to abide by if you're not an MP. You don't have to declare if you're just a, if you or I, James, managed to get our hands on £5 million, we don't need to declare it. But this is different. The rules for elected politicians are of course understandably much much higher, and do need to be declared if you're getting that sort of money declared, but equally it hasn't been done. So Nigel Farage believes that because he wasn't an MP at the time, he didn't need to. And I'm sure you've been hearing him when he's been speaking about this, and lots of journalists have been asking about this. He hasn't been hugely willing to answer questions on it.
Bernard Manning.
But he has implied that the information that was released about this has been gotten by illegal means. Now, he hasn't told us exactly what that meant or what's happening. I'm hearing from my sources in the Reform Party that they're considering taking legal action over this. They have said that before. But again,
a lot of legal action being considered over there at the moment.
Indeed. But like I say, they believe that Nigel Farage has sought legal counsel, has spoken to people, and he doesn't believe that he needs to declare this. I'm just getting...
Just to be absolutely clear, regardless of whether... no one is disputing that he took £5 million in secret from this billionaire who's based in Thailand and has made all of his money out of cryptocurrency, and shortly afterwards announced policies he would introduce as Prime Minister that would be to the immeasurable benefit of cryptocurrency billionaires, just like the one who gave him £5 million in secret that he chose not to tell anybody about.
Yeah, completely. Just to bring to you, one of my sources has said that they are aware that this is the case, that this story is true. Again, we haven't got a comment from the Commissioner. But I can tell you that one of my sources in Parliament has said, we can say that LBC understands that this is the case, that the Parliamentary Standards Commissioner, Daniel Greenberg, has written to MPs and written to parties interested and involved to say that he has opened an investigation into Nigel Farage. That's being confirmed by our sources now here at LBC.
A question is also being asked today about some helicopter rides that he took in the course of campaigning. But we are almost out of time, so they'll have to wait for another day. Thank you very much indeed, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, in the middle of what I suspect will continue to be a rather busy day. President Trump has just landed in Beijing. Whether or not he's aware of that, I'll leave you to decide for yourself. But the rest of us can say with some confidence that that is quite an important trip, about which we will learn more in the course of today and indeed tomorrow. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks, James. James's Gogglebox Royal Commentary is done. The King's Speech, I love it. If the King's Speech is done, no fireworks there. Can't quite say the same about the Labour Party, can we? When the picture of the day, so far anyway, is not our monarch but the health secretary having the shortest coffee in history with the prime minister at Downing Street. There are reports now from streeting allies, as the saying goes, that Wes Streeting will resign, or presumably could be sacked as well, today, tomorrow, and run against Keir Starmer. Has he decided that this is the window that is his best chance? Or is it vital that Andy Burnham gets the chance to run as well? If there is a contest, the Northern Ireland secretary and Labour veteran Hilary Benn speaks to me in a couple of minutes.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, it's understood Wes Streeting has told his allies he plans to resign tomorrow and trigger a Labour leadership contest. The Prime Minister continues to resist calls to resign following last week's local election results. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark says the reports have appeared in the Times.
The fact that Wes Streeting's team have not confirmed nor denied any of this, they've not put out any statements, they've not picked up the phone, it lends me to think, firstly, it's probably true. but B, that they don't want to do anything or say anything today. So are we in a bit of a holding pattern now for the next 24 hours while we wait for a new dawn, not the King's Speech Day, in order to give the government that time, and also to give Wes Streeting time, right? He needs to make sure that he's got the numbers, for goodness sake.
87 backbenchers are now urging Sir Keir Starmer to step down, while 11 trade unions affiliated to the party say this can't continue. But despite the uncertainty surrounding the PM, the King has delivered his speech at the state opening of Parliament. Charles set out the government's agenda, which he says will restore hope across the country.
They will defend the British values of decency, tolerance and respect for difference under our common flag. And they will harness the potential of the pride felt across this country for its communities.
It contained 35 bills and draft bills touching on issues including immigration, the NHS and improving key infrastructure. MPs will now debate the speech in Parliament. Stay with LBC for the latest. Also this afternoon, an investigation has begun into whether Nigel Farage breached parliamentary standards by failing to declare a gift of £5 million. The leader of Reform UK received the money in the 12 months before becoming an MP. Under the rules, members are supposed to register all their financial interests received within a year of entering Parliament. Nigel Farage has previously insisted it was a personal gift. Detectives investigating the deaths of three women pulled from the sea off Brighton say they're not looking for anyone else. Emergency services were called to concerns about their welfare just before 6 a.m. And an online suicide forum, which an investigation by LBC highlighted, has been fined almost £1 million. Last year, we found the site, which hasn't been named publicly, had been linked to more than 130 deaths. Ofcom has given the forum 10 days to make safeguarding changes under the Online Safety Act. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 11 points at 10,276. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixed afternoon ahead with showers across much of the UK. Some of these will be heavy with a chance of thunder, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
I'm in the kitchen with Charlie Bigham. So what have we got here, Charlie?
My brand new pan-fry pad thai noodles.
Noodles? But you're Mr. Fish Pie Guy.
Guilty. And while ovens rule at roasting,
the pan is king of noodling.
Whether it's pad thai, yakisoba or laksa, finding that perfect texture is a bottomless noodle rabbit hole.
But all I have to do is stir it in the pan for 6 minutes, right?
Bingo! Try the new Charlie Bigham's Asian pan-fry noodle range, handmade in my kitchen.
Pan-fried in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Today, so far anyway, has been about a speech and a conversation. The King's speech in the Palace of Westminster and a conversation between the Prime Minister and the Health Secretary in No. 10 Downing Street. Both lasted just over 15 minutes, there or thereabouts. Wes Streeting's allies since that meeting have told the BBC that they expect the Health Secretary to challenge the Prime Minister's leadership as soon as tomorrow. You have been speaking to me for days now about the situation at the top of government and in the Labour Party more generally. Hilary Benn joins me, Secretary of State for Northern Ireland and Labour MP for Leeds South, to help us with some of the goings-on. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me again.
Well, Sheila, nice to talk to you again.
Will Wes Streeting resign tomorrow and trigger a leadership contest? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Do you think he will?
I have no idea. What I know is that I'm supporting the Prime Minister because I think we need to take a deep breath. We've had a very bad set of results that you and I discussed on Friday. But the task facing the government is to get on with governing. And today's King's speech has set out the next phase of our programme. We don't often get the chance as a Labour Party to form a government and to introduce a second King's speech. And you only have to look at what happened under the last government. Prime Minister after Prime Minister, challenge, ferment, chaos. And Britain's reputation and indeed our economy were damaged by that. I think it'd be a very bad idea to repeat that. We need to listen to what the electorate have said. We need to get on faster and bolder. But I think we do that by rallying around the Prime Minister. That's my very firm view.
Was there evidence of faster and bolder in that speech?
Oh, heavens. Nationalising British Steel. Now, if someone had suggested that, 10 years ago?
Possibly.
Well, But why? Look, we took action to prevent the plant from being closed down with the emergency legislation last year. Why did we do that? Because steel is a strategic industry. You can't be an independent nation that doesn't have its capacity to make steel for industry and for defence. And we're bringing forward legislation in this King's speech to enable us to nationalise it. The Energy Independence Bill. Look, if we've learned anything from the current oil and gas crisis, what happened 4 years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine, what happened in 1973 with the oil price shock, is as long as we continue to be dependent on oil and gas, then these crises will come back and they affect people filling up their car, doing their weekly shop. And we are blessed with extraordinary wealth of renewable energy possibility around the British Isles. And the Energy Independence Bill is about taking that forward further and faster so we can get ourselves off this dependence on oil and gas that is produced in other parts of the world.
And while they, of course, matter to the lives of people, yeah, of course they do, and once they're established and set in motion, if that's what happens, they're not going to change things quickly, are they? And I noticed in the speech there was a complete absence of anything in terms of legislation on welfare cuts. Hasn't that shown us that this Prime Minister can be and is currently being pushed around by his backbenchers?
Well, I wouldn't accept it. There is a reference, as you know, in the King's speech to the Timms Review. And following the debate about welfare changes, Stephen Timms, who's a very good colleague and a fine minister, has set up his review to look and see how we're going to make progress. What is the challenge there? What is the best answer to welfare? It's to get people back into work. Look at the youth guarantee that is part of our commitment that we're making. When you've got such a high percentage of young people who are not in education, work or training, that is not good for them, it's not good for the future of the country. Increasing the minimum wage is also a policy that helps, because we are spending large amounts of money supporting people because they don't earn enough to pay the rent and put food on the table and do all of those things. So work, more jobs, better paid jobs is part of the welfare policy, and you can see that in the legislation that is going to be brought forward, and Stephen Timms will bring forward his review in due course.
Do you accept, I have a letter here from the trade unions, from 11 trade unions, do you accept that Keir Starmer has lost, is losing a great deal of union support as party leader? Many of the members say he's lost their support. Clearly the electorate is not inclined towards him, towards the party at the moment. And the Parliamentary Labour Party is in, I don't know, strictures over what to do next about the leadership. You keep saying you don't want any more instability. The Prime Minister keeps saying that. But there's only so long Canute can hold back the waves, isn't there?
Well, we need to just reflect on what has happened. This is not, by any means, the first time that a sitting government has taken a kicking in midterm elections. I mean, Tony Blair